Please, I invite you to stand and join the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the clerk call a roll, please?
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Mr. McDavid?
Here.
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas?
Yeah.
Ms. Nowser?
Here.
We have minutes from the regular city council meeting of December 7, 2015. Are there any corrections? If not, may I have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Are there any corrections to the agenda?
Mayor, I need to abstain on R-195-15.
I so move. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Any other corrections to the agenda? May I have a motion and second for approval of the agenda as amended?
So move.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed say nay. Welcome. We offer several opportunities during the meeting for public comment. During the public hearings, old business, new business. And there is an open comment section at the end of the meeting. Each individual is entitled to 3 minutes. I'll ask you to respect the timer that's in front of the dais. If you represent an organization that's primarily involved in the issue at hand, you may ask for and will be granted 5 minutes. We will make appointments to 7 boards and commissions. For the Columbia Vision Commission, we have 1 qualified applicant. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Lisa Gardy?
So moved.
Second. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Commission on Cultural Affairs, we have 1 qualified applicant. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Michael Sled?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Human Services Commission, we have 2 qualified applicants. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Stacy Ford?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Sharon Shatkin?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Mayor's Council on Physical Fitness and Health, we have 2 qualified applicants. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Jamie Gale?
So moved.
Second. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. May I have a motion and second to appoint Amanda Schaefer?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Police Retirement Board, we have 1 qualified applicant. May I have a motion and second to appoint Matthew Pitzer?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Source Water Protection Plan Task Force, we have 1 qualified applicant. May I have a motion and second to appoint Terry Merritt?
So moved.
Second. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Citizens Police Review Board, we have 4 qualified applicants for the 1 vacancy. Please call the roll.
Ms. Peters?
Renee Henson.
Mr. McDavid?
Ronald Larkin.
Mr. Ruffin?
Renee Henson.
Mr. Trapp?
David Krieger.
Mr. Scala?
David Krieger.
Mr. Thomas?
David Krieger.
Ms. Nowser?
Renee Henson.
We'll have to do that again.
So Henson has 3.
Krieger has 3, and Larkin has 1.
Please call the roll.
Mr. McDavid?
I think I'm the second, aren't I?
I think you start with me.
Yeah, but we rotate when it's a tie.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Renee Henson. You can do it however you want. That's how
Renee
we
Henson.
Normally do. Mr. Ruffin?
Renee Henson.
Mr. Trapp?
Renee Henson.
Mr. Scala?
David Krieger.
Mr. Thomas?
David Krieger.
Ms. Nowser?
Renee Henson.
Ms. Peters?
Renee Henson.
Renee Henson has it. Those who have contacted the city manager's office by noon on Wednesday prior to the council meeting can speak at the beginning of the meeting on any topic that's not on the agenda. Only 2 people can speak on the same topic. Tonight we have 1 request. I'll yield 5 minutes to Tracy Wilson-Klickamp.
Good evening. I'm Tracy Wilson Kleekamp. I believe my address is on record. I'm with a group called Race Matters. And for the last year, we've been coming to the council to speak about implicit bias, cultural competency, systemic and structural racism. And we've also spoken about the mayor's task force on community violence, particularly looking at the final recommendations of the mayor's task force on community violence report. You may wonder about the connections we've been trying to make between racism and the implementation of community policing and other task force recommendations. And we're concerned that the task force recommendations are written in race neutral language, but we continue to have the conversation in a race neutral way. So it was a great presentation that you did before in the pre-council meeting tonight about our social service delivery, how you have the metric for looking at how services are funded and how the resources are directed to the community. But the big part of that packet that was in there was about race. And to me, the great thing about what Mr. Ledin said in the end about bearing your pyramid of tasks, of things to do, number one to me is our community has to have a conversation about race. We have to understand what are those barriers that are there, and do we recognize them in our institution, all right? So we can have all the teams in the world, and we can say we're going to be a lovely, kumbaya, happy family in 3 years, but if we don't understand how those systemic barriers keep people from getting an education, which keep people in poverty, and if we don't build the kind of tools that are worker bees need for the city to interact with those communities, we're not going to be able to solve problems. So let me be specific. When I say cultural competency schools tools, I mean it's great if you have this team that's dedicated to four geographic areas. I disagree with the policy per se. I feel like we're kind of being co-opted. We're saying we're collaborating and we picked a committee to do this and that. I think we have a systemic problem that needs systemic policy recognized in ordinance. All right? But what I want to know is how are we training our officers so that they have the requisite skills to go out and work in those communities? What tools do they have? How does our city show in its own economic development policy that it understands the challenges that, 47% of our African-American community has in terms of unemployment? So I think that at the end of the day, I kind of struggle. I don't want to be a total cranky pants because I think you're doing some great things. But again, the elephant in the middle of the room is race. And until the city leadership can address, particularly the police department, learn to acquire the respective skills you need to discuss race, poverty, and class and their corresponding disparities, the community outreach union's intentions, anybody's intentions they can't fix it. You need to understand how those barriers exist and how to dismantle them. So the first order of business is to do some homework on race and understand systemically how it's affected this community historically, because until we understand that, poverty and racism are not going away. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move to public hearings. Please read item A and B, 366-15.
Agenda item A is the construction of irrigation improvements at the Columbia Cosmopolitan Recreation Area. Council Bill 366-15 is an ordinance determining it is in the public interest to construct irrigation improvements at Columbia Cosmopolitan Recreation Area, approving and adopting plans and specifications, determining that the work shall be done by contract, calling for bids through the purchasing division, providing for payment for the improvement, authorizing the city manager to obtain, execute, and record all documents necessary for the improvement, providing for compliance with the prevailing wage law and state-mandated construction safety training, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Thank you, Mary. Mayor, the department's requesting council approve a project to replace a 32-year-old irrigation system in Cosmo Park. The project budget's $90,000 with all the funds coming from the department's recreation services user fee. This is the main irrigation system for all the athletic fields in Cosmo Park. It's located just north of the Rainbow Softball Center, just below the pond. The Parks and Recreation Commission endorsed the project at their November 19th meeting. Following public hearing, staff request council approve the ordinance authorizing the project to proceed.
Questions from council? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Seeing none, I'll ask for discussion by council.
I like the fact that we're doing this irrigation with non-potable water, that we're not putting extra chemicals in the world, making good use of our resources. And this looks like a good improvement for an already good practice.
Please call the roll on B36615.
Council Bill 36615, Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nowser?
Yes.
Please read item B and B36715.
Agenda item B is the construction of improvements to the archery range at American Legion Park. Council Bill 36715 is an ordinance determining it is in the public interest to construct improvements to the archery range at American Legion Park, approving and adopting plans and specifications, determining that a portion of the work shall be done by contract, calling for bids through the purchasing division, determining that a portion of the project shall be done by city employees, providing for payment for the improvement, authorizing acceptance of a grant from the Easton Sports Development Foundation to appropriating funds, authorizing the city manager to obtain, execute, and record all documents necessary for the improvement, providing for compliance with the prevailing wage law and state-mandated construction safety training, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Thank you, Mayor. We request council approval to renovate the archery range at American Legion Park. This project is $35,000 with $20,000 coming from our annual park improvement funds from the 2010 park sales tax. We also solicited and received a grant from the Easton Foundation in the amount of $15,000. The project will include grading the site out at American Legion so that we can add 16 total targets ranging from 10 to 80 yards in length. Four of them will be at 20 yards. We'll have new ADA walkways leading to and from the targets. One of the other points that the archers wanted was an elevated shooting tower. By doing the grading, we'll be able to allow for ADA access to the top of the shooting tower. It'll be 10 foot tall. The project also includes miscellaneous fencing, signs, bow racks, arrow holders, etc., things to do it. We met with archers, and again, we met again with the commission on November 19th, and they endorsed the project. So following the public hearing, we request that council approve the project, authorize city manager to sign the grant with the Easton Foundation, and then appropriate the funds for the project. Questions?
Questions from council?
I just had one question, and that is, I take it that archery is the kind of thing where you have targets and so on, and occasionally they need to be replaced or upgraded or whatever, and that was all factored into the, with some of this grant money, and some of the appropriations will take care of the maintenance as well as the construction?
Actually, the Missouri Department of Conservation provides us the targets every year. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So they're part of our partner with this. They'll replace the targets. We've been doing that with them since we built the initial archery range.
Oh, that's even better.
Yes.
Thank you.
Would anyone from the public like to speak? We'll move to council discussion. I appreciate the fact that you were able to get a grant funding from an archery advocacy group to help pay for this. And I particularly appreciate the fact that the first item, probably should have mentioned it then, that was entirely funded by user fees. And so I think you're showing a wise and prudent use of limited resources, and I thank you for that. Any other comments? Please call the roll on B36615.
Council Bill 36715, Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nowser?
Yes.
Next is 347-15 and B-348-15.
Council Bill 347-15 is an ordinance approving the preliminary plat of the Vineyards, plat number 2, authorizing a development agreement with the Columbia School District number 93 and Vineyards Columbia LLC, setting forth A condition for approval and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective, second reading. Council Bill 348-15 is an ordinance approving the final plat of the Vineyards, plat number 4, a major subdivision, accepting the dedication of rights-of-way and easements, granting a variance from the subdivision regulations regarding sidewalk construction subject to a condition, and fixing the time when the ordinance shall become effective, second reading.
Staff, please.
I'll report on both of these items together. As read by the clerk, the actions tonight are a proposed major change to the Vineyards preliminary plat. A preliminary plat is a map of future lots and streets. It does not create lots, blocks, or streets by its approval, but it indicates an intent to create through final platting those lots. The second item is Vineyards plat number 4 final plat, and that represents the school site portion of the major change, which I'll describe. This is a map of the Vineyards preliminary plat in the light shaded area, and I just want to highlight a few things here. First of all, the Vineyards is a subdivision that was created back in 2005. That's when it began. And there's been several final plats to date. There's an area north of Grindstone Creek off of Route WW shown here. So those are existing lots and homes. And then there's another area that accesses off of Rolling Hills Road. That's south of the Grindstone Creek and indicated with aerial photography there. Those are lots and streets that already exist. The streets are highlighted in the purple lines. But the area bounded in red and shaded in white is an area that is being refashioned from the preliminary plan as it was approved by council originally in 2005. Primary reason is Columbia Public Schools is interested in acquiring approximately 28 acres out of the Vineyards for an elementary school site. Also highlighted on this map is a park site. That was an obligation of the 2005 development agreement. It's been reconfigured and expanded, including some surface water. It's 42 acres, and the Parks and Recreation Department has been working with the subdivision on that. That is a future park site, not being created by this action, but in a sense being reserved by the tonight's actions. This is the preliminary plat, some of the data. First of all, the location is generally southwest of Route WW and Rolling Hills Road. Total area, and this is excluding the area that's currently developed, 266 acres approximately. And there's a total of 289 lots in this planned future subdivision. The one that most of the discussion tonight will focus on is the largest lot, and that's the proposed school site that is shown outlined in yellow, and that's off of a street called Columbia Gorge Parkway. The roadway and lot, again, talking about the preliminary plat for the Vineyards, some of the changes, the roadway and the lot layout has been adjusted to accommodate that future elementary school. What is shown is a single lot with a single elementary school building on the original preliminary plat was approximately 50 lots or parts of lots. There's a full connection to Columbia Gorge Parkway and Raccoon Ridge, which is a street in the Woodland subdivision that is proposed in the prelim plat, but I'll quickly add that that is with a secure gate that would be an emergency access only gate, meaning the streets would not be open to traffic. They'd be joined. There'd be a gate that could be bypassed by emergency services, meaning police, fire, or medical emergency personnel, but not to be open to traffic on an everyday basis. There is a larger parkland dedication committed to by the owner, and by the way, the applicant is civil group representing Vineyards Columbia LLC, which is the owner of the property. And then a party to the development agreement that's included is Columbia Public Schools as well as the owner. The 2005 development agreement is being revised to address off-site improvements to support the school site. That means responsibility for building certain street segments to provide access to the school site, intersection improvements where the streets intersect with Rolling Hills Road, and also sidewalks. There is a final plat for the school tract, which we'll show momentarily, and that includes also some street segments that would open up new streets or street segments to provide access to the school. This is the final plat area, and again, it's a single lot, and I believe that's just under 25 acres, the actual lot area. There's also some street area shown here. And this is an extension of Columbia Gorge across the north of the school site. So that's part of the final plat, is dedicating that additional right-of-way. There is a street called Howell Mountain Drive that is on the east boundary of the proposed school site, and that right-of-way is being dedicated as part of this plat. And then there are two streets. We have Pride Mountain is the curving street, and that connects Howell Mountain to Columbia Gorge. There's a roundabout where that connection is made. And then there's an Oakville Mountain Drive. That is a secondary access to the school site from Rolling Hills Road. So it's a one-lot plat. This would be the actual real estate being created by action tonight. Create that one lot and also the street segments that have been described. There are also some sidewalk variances that are being requested, meaning the sidewalks are simply requested to be deferred, and those would be sidewalks on the east side of Howell Mountain and the north side of Pride Mountain and the north side of Oakville. Columbia Public has agreed to extend sidewalks along the east side of its site and the entire north side of its site, and there will also be sidewalks on the south side of this street system that approaches the school along the south. And the sidewalks will be added with the ultimate platting of residential lots on the north side of those streets that I've described. Again, there are streets, and I beg your pardon, I called it Oakville Mountain Drive. It's actually Oakville Ranch Drive. That's this street right here that curves into Rolling Hills. The off-site improvements and the timing of those, when those have to be delivered, is addressed in the development agreement. Mentioned that sidewalks would be installed on one side of the street, but there would be a continuous route. Rolling Hills Road, when improved as a Boone County Road Project, did install sidewalks on that roadway, so the homes that are located in the vicinity will be able to send school children via sidewalk to the school site on a continuous route. Toggling back to the preliminary plat, just to show council and our audience the differences that kind of cascade from the bundling of a number of residential lots into a single school site. What you're looking at is the school site here on this image on the left would be located on the south side of Columbia Gorge. And what's been done with that is all of the lots that formerly fronted along, all the future lots that formerly fronted on Columbia Gorge Parkway opposite the school, have been given access on cul-de-sacs. They're short cul-de-sacs, less than 350 feet, I believe, each. But that is designed so that there won't be homes with residential access directly opposite the school. So some street reconfiguration that's kind of a consequence of the school site being added. This shows a little more clearly the conditions on the prelim plat. Again, there's originally going to be a loop street through this site that ties into Howell Mountain, also a two cul-de-sacs there with I think there's 46 whole lots, and then there's parts of several others making about 50 lots that are being removed from consideration for future platting and being replaced with this single school site that'll have street frontage on two sides. This is showing a concept that is in Section 4 of the ordinance, and there is an amendment sheet that actually council will have to act on to change some of the language. It's clarifying language on who the gate is available to, and that'd be emergency services. And then how in the future would council be able to consider any changes to that? And it's stated that homeowner associations could ask council by majority vote of their respective organizations to consider opening up access. But council at its sole discretion would decide whether or not that gate would ever be opened. So, and I'll mention that back in 2005, the city approved the plat with a note that said there would be such a gate, so there wouldn't be cross access between the Woodlands and the Vineyards subdivision on an everyday basis. This is just an overview map showing, again, this is the entirety of the preliminary plat area that's being amended to show it in context. The South Fork of the Grindstone Creek runs through the middle of it, so it's really kind of a divided subdivision. It really is two places in terms of the neighborhoods we're creating, be unified ultimately by a trail system, and then there'll be a park where this surface water is located. There's also power lines that run through the west portion of the prelim plat. Doesn't affect the school side any, but that's Boone Electric. And it's stated that the developer will provide ultimately a single lot to provide access to that 42-acre park site. But again, that's a future obligation that is being memorialized in this agreement and will be completed upon platting of a future phase. Focus right now is on the school site, which is in this south region. And you can see there's some open land to the south. We're not aware of development activity or subdivision activity directly south. You have the winding roads of the Woodlands subdivision. They have Raccoon Ridge is this street that ends at, really it's the city limits there, as well as the property boundary. And then you have another street that accesses Rolling Hills, and yet another access to that subdivision at New Haven. And as council can imagine, Planning and Zoning Commissioner heard a lot of testimony from property owners and residents of the Woodlands about this subdivision. Here's that similar overview map showing those subdivisions in the vicinity and the tracks, kind of a mix of the urbanizing or suburbanizing and the still rural and the school site superimposed on it. This is a graphic that shows the final plat that is to be approved by ordinance, and it shows the streets that are being added, where you see solid lines meeting the lightweight lines. That's an indication that lots and streets already exist, and so they're extending off of Columbia Gorge, as mentioned. They're extending Columbia Gorge farther west, and they're extending Howell Mountain, Pride Mountain, and Oakville Ranch. There's also improvements within the right-of-way of Rolling Hills, primarily an obligation of Columbia Public Schools, and that's laid out in the agreement. And here's just a schematic that shows some of those things, indicating that there will be additional right turn capacity added at Columbia Gorge and Rolling Hills. There will be left turn capacity added at Rolling Hills Road, and there's an exhibit as part of the development agreement that shows conceptually how that intersection is to be designed or redesigned, and then also turn lane improvements at Oakville Ranch where it meets with Rolling Hills. The sidewalks that are proposed are indicated in the heavy black line. And the variances mentioned, which are really just a delay in sidewalk installation to wait for future lot development by others, that those are shown in red. This is a preliminary or conceptual site plan. The representatives of Columbia Public Schools can speak more effectively to this, but it indicates access off of the two public streets. The one to the north would be the bus access, to the south would be, or I beg your pardon, bus access to the north and employee and student drop-off to the east of the school. I hope I didn't invert that. So here's our results from the Planning and Zoning Commission. A lot of testimony on this, a lot of discussion about how to best access this school site. Ultimately, the commission recommends by a 5-3 vote that the preliminary plat be approved, and that would be subject to council's approval of the development agreement, which really anticipates the final plat. That's when the infrastructure improvements are due. And then also approval by the same margin of the final plat, subject to council approval of the pending amendment to the preliminary plat of the vineyards and approval of the sidewalk variances that have been mentioned. And with that, I'll conclude my report. Do you have any questions?
Can you go back to the slide that shows where the power lines are? Two or three back. Yeah, those are... am I correct in that those are 161 kV lines?
I don't know the specifications, sir. They are major.
Those are the ones
major
that
transmission.
Leave Rebel Hills right. And go down east and south of Columbia down to Grindstone lines. Am I correct? The ones you see on Grindstone, this is where it comes from. Okay. Just want to clarify that. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have a few. I know Columbia Gorge was not happy that that was going to be the primary entrance to the school. So what is now the primary entrance, Oakville Ranch Drive?
That's really proposed as a secondary access. You would still have the major intersection would be Rolling Hills and Columbia Gorge. And Oakville Ranch would be required secondary access for public safety purposes. It would no doubt get a lot of use because of the orientation of the school with the large parking field that accesses off of Howell Mountain. So I would expect there'd be a number of vehicles going through there.
And my understanding is that the school and the neighborhood association got together and they were okay then using Columbia Gorge now as the primary street with the accommodations of the left-hand turn lanes and the...
Yeah, there'd be the... it's shown in the packet as... there'd be dedicated left turn. There'd be a widening of the pavement from what's there now, and there'd be dedicated right-hand turn to be a southbound to westbound entering turn lane. There would be a dedicated left turn lane, and then there'd be what's termed in the development agreement as a receiving lane. That would be for vehicles that are eastbound and northbound movements out of the subdivision. So the capacity of the intersection would be expanded.
Okay, thank you.
I think
any other questions?
Yeah, I'll ask a couple now. There appears to be a road marked as part of this plat going from just by the northeast corner of the park area. Would that connect up to WW?
Let me go to another exhibit. Okay.
Talking about
this one right here?
One. Yeah.
Yeah, ultimately that connects to a public street. And to give a reference, that's the Elks Lodge underneath that CGP label, which is a county zoning district there. So there'd be public street access and access to a signal. Yeah.
So at the moment, the roadway that's in the county is in existence, is it?
Yeah, there's a roadway.
There's stubs there.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the small subdivision, but there's a subdivision that's quite old that's south of the Elks Lodge.
Yeah.
Well, El Chaparral's over here. That's the great big one. Concord, thank you.
So that road cannot provide access to the school if it were to go over the Grindstone Creek there?
Well,
has that been discussed?
A bridge is not part of this package of approvals. So, but if you ask me a general question, can it? With engineering, that is possible. So, but that is not part of the layout that's being presented tonight.
Okay. So that road will provide some access to the park from the north. How will people from the newly platted lots access the park? I know that there's some talk of a one lot being donated by the developer to the city.
Yeah.
Can you give me an indication of whereabouts that lot?
Yeah, it's fairly specific in the agreement. It basically says it has to be a lot that's abutting the park site, and it has to be northeast of the power lines that the mayor was asking about a moment ago. So that would be this range of lots here. And again, that park site's highlighted in green. And so the idea would be to dedicate a lot that be that would meet the criteria in the agreement. It has to be fairly flat. Has to be good for facility access.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be worked out as part of a final plat design. So there would be construction drawings that would accompany that. And the Parks and Recreation would approve it using the development agreement as guidance.
Okay.
And there's another street. You mentioned access. There is another street that's to be extended from that North Vineyards area to the west, mm-hmm. and that would run right up to that range of lots there.
Okay, great. And the creek obviously kind of cuts east-west across this plat. I know there are no roads crossing the creek. Will there be any kind of pedestrian connection between the northern and southern parts of this neighborhood?
It's not proposed at this time. That's a possibility. I think, again, that's probably something, you know, it's not present right now in the existing north and south platted sections of Vineyards, but there are north and south sections of Vineyards to be platted, so that could be included in the
you're talking about the final plat point?
That could be included in the final design, right, if it's strongly desired to foster some kind of at least pedestrian connectivity.
At the moment,
but
I mean,
it's not being presented to you tonight as a location.
There's probably more than 100 lots north of the creek there, residential lots. There'll be a lot of elementary age kids.
There will be.
I'm just wondering how they're going to get to the school. Kind of the trail will go alongside, the grindstone trail will go alongside the creek.
Right.
But at the moment, they would have to swim the creek or something to get to school.
I imagine they'll be in cars.
You imagine what?
I imagine they'll be in cars, not behind the wheel either.
And then what would their route be? Yeah. Would they have to go all the way out to WW and Rolling Hills?
Yeah, it would be via the WW Rolling Hills street system.
Well, I really hope we can avoid that and find a way, because that's quite a short distance, really.
Yeah. And Columbia Public might want to comment on that if they have.
Oh, and I had one other question about the trail as well. You had a slide that showed the old platting just north of the school and the new proposed platting, that one.
This one?
So I noticed on the old one on the left with the lollipop streets, certainly, actually, on both the left lollipop and the right lollipop, there is what looks like a public easement connecting the street to the, I guess, public property.
Is it this here?
Yeah, exactly, which is where the grindstone trail will go. But I don't see anything equivalent on the four new cul-de-sacs. That's not...
Yeah, that's
is that a correct interpretation?
Yeah, that's a schematic. And again, what I'd say is...
At the final plat stage.
If we're desiring maintenance access, trail access, something like that, we'd want to coordinate it with the facilities that are available there and put something in.
And the time that could possibly happen would be at the final plat.
Yeah, and, you know, again, this, that is a...
A public
access. I don't know what the contour interval is between front and back, but that's a pretty severe slope, too, I'd just add
right.
that. those are some of the challenges that I think we have with pedestrian access here.
Great. Thanks, Tim.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Tim,
any other questions?
I do. Sorry. Is there any interest in putting a light at Rolling Hills and WW? Or at New Haven?
Would our staff want to comment on that?
You know, you're going to have increased traffic with the school.
WW in Rolling Hills. traffic control. Yeah.
Yeah. And then is Rolling Hills a county road?
No, that's all been transferred to the city.
Okay.
So Rolling Hills and WW, there is a proposal for intersection improvements that was done with the development of Old Hawthorne. And they are working through design options, if you will, right now by the developer on whether it be a signal or a roundabout at that intersection.
Okay, the developer in Old Hawthorne?
Correct.
Okay. And then Rolling Hills, is that going to continue to be a two-lane road, or is there expectation of widening it to four lanes?
Yes, it's set up for a four-lane section.
Just that section?
No, currently it's has been laid out as a four-lane section from New Haven to WW. That was done by the county as part of our CATSO major thoroughfare plan. And then the section from WW to Richland Road, done by the developer, is also built as a two with the expansion to a four-lane section.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Now I'll open a public hearing. Would anyone like to speak?
Mr. Mayor. Good evening. My name is Tom Smith. I'm an attorney with Missouri Ed Council, 2401 Bernadette Drive, Suite 117, Columbia. My firm represents Columbia Public Schools. I'd first like to thank you all for giving us the opportunity to come here tonight and speak to you about this elementary school project. You should have just received some updated handouts about the project, and those will mirror the slides you're going to see here tonight. I'll be very brief at this point in time because we have several other representatives from the district here to speak to you in more detail about the project. And I realize that we're all limited to a certain amount of time. So, Mr. Mayor, with your permission, I'd like to split my time and come back up after the remaining representatives have spoken and speak to you again. Thank you. With that, I will bring up Charles Ostreich. He is the Director of Facilities and Construction Services for the district, and he's going to talk to you more about the process that was used for this project and how we started all the way up to how we got to here tonight.
Thank you. My name is Charles Ostreich. I'm Director of Facilities and Construction Services for the district. We're talking about a 2014 bond to approve the building of an East Elementary School. We began this process just a little over a year ago when the board authorized us to go out and begin a site search. In January, we hired the services of an engineering firm to conduct that search. They went out and initially they identified 24 possible sites very quickly using the criteria on the next slide. They were able to narrow the 24 sites down to 5 sites. And then at the next public meeting, we were able to narrow that down to 3 sites. We then ranked those 3 sites, 1, 2, and 3, and decided to do more exploratory investigation into the sites. I might add that on the next slide, what you're seeing here is what the school district first looked at as a potential site for the East Elementary School. It met the initial criteria that we were looking for. If it were finished out as presented, it would allow for dual access to the site, among other things. The next slide is post a meeting with the concept review meeting with the city, where one of the main concerns were they did not want driveways backing out onto Columbia Gorge, so we went out and we replatted and created the lollipop that you see there. We also created the U on the left side of your paper there. The U was devised or thought of to help discourage traffic from going through Columbia Gorge into the Woodlands area. The next slide is a proposed cul-de-sac roundabout that Columbia Public Schools proposed to the homeowners, but it was not presented to the governing authorities because it was not totally accepted as a feasible to the homeowners. The next slide shows what was offered as a concession to not develop the road all the way to the west of the Woodlands to offset that cost and create the secondary access out and toward Roland Hills off of Howe Mountain and Pride Mountain Drive there. The next slide is many different versions and proposals that was sent to us by the homeowners, suggestions on how we could maybe improve and save cost. We did explore all those options. We evaluated them with our engineering firm and others and determined that not to be the best solution, and it certainly was going to cost more. The next slide is also a proposal that was sent to us by the homeowners, and we again performed a feasibility study of this site, and it would have taken out a lot of the forest there. It actually did not provide any more lots, and it was going to additionally add money. The next slide is what, after our P&Z meeting, was offered and what was initially put in the development agreement. Post that meeting, we met with homeowners, and it was brought up to our attention again that they would like some way to turn, go back up and turn left on Roland Hills, and going out to that proposed lower street there did not offer that. So on the next slide, we went back again and extended the road to connect to the roundabout, which would allow traffic to go back out to Columbia Gorge and be able to turn north onto Roland Hills. The next couple of slides is just the amount of improvements that we offered through our many meetings, and I might add that at each time we listened and went back to the drawing board, we spent more money, so, or proposed more money. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Linda Quinley, 1818 West Worley. I am the Chief Financial and Operations Officer for the school district. We thank you for the chance to talk with you this evening. So here we are on December 21st, and as you can see by a timeline that I am not going to read to you that is in your packet, our board, as Charlie indicated, did begin this process last January in a public session and then went into the process that happens in school districts where certain things happen in closed and certain things can happen in open. I'm sure you are familiar with it. There are rules for these kinds of things for us. What we have been most pleased about on this process, while there has been a lot of change from where we began, when we are selecting a site, we do not know the results of the traffic study and those things that are going to make significant impact. And so our entire process is based upon working collectively with the parties at the table. And those parties include the city staff, who challenges us and pushes us, the neighborhoods, the people who are going to live in the area, as well as fire and safety, and then, of course, various legal counsel. And in this case, the seller, too. And what we wanted you to see, have the opportunity to see here, is the amount of time and effort that has gone into this. The most significant piece of work and the largest chunk of time was the actual work of the traffic study, which, of course, is performed by the professionals. And that took from about June 30th until almost the end of August to be completed. But as we went through the process, we shared the information as we had it available and listened, and as you can see, changed our plan and path. And so what we want to do now is ask our architect to come talk to you a little bit about the site, the design itself.
Good evening. Chris Davis with PW Architects here in Columbia. The image you see on the screen is pretty much what the new school will look like. The new elementary schools, if you're familiar with Elliott Battle and Beulah Ralph, are prototype schools for the school district, so they have a lot of similarity in their layouts, their images, the construction materials. The building for this site will be sized for 650 students, and the district expects between 5 to 6 regular sized school buses to serve the facility. The expectation is that once this school is open in 2018, that Cedar Ridge Elementary will no longer function as a traditional elementary school, and it's the image you see now of Cedar Ridge and the trailers around it. The expectation is that once the new school opens, the school district will be removing the trailers and repurposing Cedar Ridge Elementary. Thanks.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Appreciate the opportunity. My name is Tom Trabue with Think McClure Engineering Company, offices at 1901 Pennsylvania Drive, Columbia, Missouri. As indicated, we are the engineering consultant working on behalf of the Columbia Public Schools. Over the last several months, has been indicated, we've worked through many concerns of the homeowners associations and the city staff. I would like to discuss specifically the remaining concerns of the Vineyards and the Woodlands homeowners associations, and also provide some technical background concerning the traffic study and the proposed intersection improvements. The Woodlands has one primary concern, and the Vineyards have approached us with three primary concerns. The first is the emergency connection that's been discussed at the Woodlands and at the end of Raccoon Ridge, as indicated in the red on this display. The original concept plan for the school included the extension of Columbia Gorge Parkway west to connect with Raccoon Ridge and the Woodlands to provide that secondary emergency access for the school. In collaboration with the city staff and the homeowners associations, the original concept was changed, as you've seen. Nonetheless, because of the updating of the preliminary plat, we must readdress this future connection and its status as a through street or emergency access. As staff indicated, this was approved as a gated access by the City Council when the preliminary plat was approved in 2005. The Planning and Zoning Commission reaffirmed that in their recommendation of plat approval on November 19th. This connectivity from a traffic and emergency access point of view does not directly impact CPS, and we are therefore somewhat neutral on this issue. We do believe, however, that full pedestrian and cyclist connectivity is important to address school-age children that may use this future street as access to the school. There are a number of lots in the Woodlands, and that would be the perfect access point to get to the school. The first issue that the Vineyards Homeowners Association has is with temporary traffic control with the school traffic. And we've highlighted that at Howe Mountain Drive. As has been briefly discussed, there is a lot of concern about all of the traffic being directed onto Columbia Gorge Parkway, and primarily because we have a number of homes that have direct access onto Columbia Gorge Parkway with driveways. And so what we've done is we've looked at readdressing the original concept by adding the Pride Mountain Drive and Oakville Ranch Drive roads. And when we get one of the slides you saw earlier, and I think I'll have one later here that again shows the school layout, we identified the primary entrance for the parent drop-off to be directly opposite of Pride Mountain Drive to encourage folks to use that as the access. CPS has also agreed in concept to providing some temporary traffic control at Howe Mountain Drive at the location that I indicated on the slide in the morning and afternoon pickup times. This type of activity, this temporary traffic control, is generally handled by the principals and school staff in, I say, quote unquote, training the new parents, and we've all been there, at the beginning of the school year, and can be continued as deemed necessary. This is pretty typical at all of the elementary and middle school drop-off locations. And, of course, any temporary traffic control on the public roadways would be coordinated with the City Public Works Department. The site plan, as Charlie indicated, the site plan for the school does provide for a bus lane and staff parking on the north side of the school that will be accessed off of Columbia Gorge Parkway. And as Chris indicated, we anticipate 5 to 8 full-size buses to serve the school. On purpose, we separate the bus traffic and the parent drop-off traffic, so there is no parent drop-off traffic on Columbia Gorge Parkway. That is all on the Oakville Ranch Drive and the Pride Mountain Drive connection. And again, by design, we've aligned those entrances and intersections to promote that type of traffic activity. An additional item that the Homeowners Association has asked for is an advisory sign on Rolling Hills Road, identifying that Oakville Ranch Drive would be the primary access to the school site. And CPS is committed to work with the Public Works Department for the appropriate advisory sign to be placed on Rolling Hills Road and where that needs to be to promote that as the primary entrance to the school. The next, and we start to get into some of the more sticky wickets, is the traffic control and intersections. We found in our experience in working with the placement of schools in many communities that most people are in favor of schools near their homes and in their neighborhoods, but are always concerned about the traffic that is generated. And CPS is very sensitive to the traffic impact that a placement of school has on the neighborhood. To that end, we commissioned a traffic study to evaluate the traffic impacts of placing an elementary school at this site. As part of the process, we conferred with City Public Works staff in providing the appropriate scoping for the project and for the report. The traffic study was prepared in June and July of this year, prior to the city transportation tax ballot in August. One item on the ballot initiative was to provide funding for road construction at Discovery Ridge Parkway, and that roadway will have a long-term impact on the traffic on Rolling Hills Road. Although not immediately identified after the tax was passed, it soon became clear that some additional evaluation was required to address the added traffic that would be generated on Rolling Hills Road in the projected time horizon. And we worked with city staff in providing that additional time and also providing some safety and sensitivity analysis from our traffic consultant. The traffic study completed for CPS identified that the proposed road improvements at Rolling Hills Road and Columbia Gorge Parkway were sufficient to meet the projected traffic demands. After this additional review, and as stated in the staff report, the city's expanded study also found the proposed intersections to be sufficient to handle the projected traffic in a safe manner and at an acceptable level of service. The CPS traffic study counted on all traffic from the development and the school utilizing Columbia Gorge Parkway. As you might recall, our preliminary concept did not include the construction of Pride Mountain Drive and Oakville Ranch Drive. We showed those as future streets. Therefore, our traffic consultant did not consider those as relief for the school. Unfortunately, leaving Oakville Ranch Drive as a future connection provided too much uncertainty for the city staff and for the homeowners association. That we'll build it someday just didn't cut the mustard. By constructing Pride Mountain Drive and Oakville Ranch Drive as part of the school construction, we've been able to remove this uncertainty and provide an immediate relief valve for that traffic. So now we have the ability to split that elementary school traffic between the Columbia Gorge Parkway and the Oakville Ranch Drive as necessary. And again, by design, we've kind of put in place measures to encourage that traffic to go to Pride Mountain Drive and Oakville Ranch Drive. The intersection at Columbia Gorge Parkway and Rolling Hills Road, and go back a slide back, Linda. Got a little ahead of ourselves there. As I indicated, the intersection at Columbia Gorge Parkway and Rolling Hills Road is sufficient to handle the projected traffic in a safe manner and an acceptable level of service. This has been verified and accepted by the city's traffic engineers. Based on the recommendations of the traffic consultant and our review and collaboration with the city staff, the proposed improvements to the intersection consist of a northbound left turn lane off of Rolling Hills Road onto Columbia Gorge Parkway, an eastbound right and left turn lanes off of Columbia Gorge Parkway going north and south on Rolling Hills Road. We are always concerned about the safety of left turn lanes crossing traffic and the exposure of that turning traffic to through traffic. The proposed arrangement of the left turn lane onto Rolling Hills Road north provides for a dedicated left turn receiving lane and a separate northbound through lane so that people are not turning directly in front of cars moving northward. CPS will be responsible for all costs associated with the improvements to that intersection, paving, widening, and restriping that is necessary. The next is Oakville Ranch Drive and Rolling Hills Road. As you will hear, this intersection is still a source of contention. In collaboration upon the advice of city staff, this intersection is proposed to be a three-quarter access, right in, right out, and left in. Due to its close proximity with Columbia Gorge Parkway, the northbound left turn onto Rolling Hills Road is proposed to be restricted in the final intersection configuration. We understand that restricting the northbound left turn will require that all northbound traffic will need to utilize the Columbia Gorge Parkway intersection. To address that in part, we have agreed with the Homeowners Association to extend Pride Mountain Drive past its intersection with Oakville Ranch Drive and connect to the current roundabout on Columbia Gorge Parkway. This facilitates the northbound traffic without placing it directly in front of the residences that are farther west on Columbia Gorge Parkway. Again, we've reviewed this with the city traffic engineers and concur with them that this configuration of streets, intersections, and traffic control is the safest solution to address the traffic generated at this site. I'd like to note eventually, and this is a perfect slide for this, with future development, we anticipate that Howell Mountain Drive, the road that is to the east side of the school building site, will eventually be extended south and back to Rolling Hills Drive. This will provide sufficient distance from Columbia Gorge Parkway for another full non-restricted intersection. And so we'll have WW, we'll have Columbia Gorge Parkway, and then somewhere south of this site, we will have another full intersection. Of additional note, CPS is agreeing through the development agreement that the Oakville Ranch Drive connection will be designated as the temporary construction access for the school to keep all school-related construction traffic off of Columbia Gorge Parkway. The Homeowners Association came to us and they were extremely concerned about having construction traffic on their only access point. And we looked at that very carefully, and that was part of the reason that we made this transition. We believe that the collaboration with the city staff and the Vineyards and the Woodlands Homeowners Association over the last several months has been fruitful in providing a plan that will meet the requirements of the school, is satisfactory to the property owner, the city, and the adjacent neighborhoods. I'd be glad to clarify any points or answer any questions you might have. I'd be glad to elaborate on the traffic study if you would like.
Questions from council? Go ahead.
Yeah, Tom, you said earlier that the entrance onto the school property for the parent drop-off location was going to be aligned with Mountain Pride Mountain.
The next slide, I believe. There we go. So Pride Mountain Drive there is on the right side, and then our parent drop-off is the major parking lot in the front. And so we have aligned that directly. We've also made sure that, and we've talked about this on previous schools, is that we have sufficient stacking distance on the school property so that we don't have any parents that are sitting on a public roadway. Mm-hmm. We have experienced that at some of our other schools, and we're working very diligently to make sure that doesn't happen in the future.
So the cars will circulate around that whole...
That's correct. They'll come in that entrance, Councilman Thomas, and immediately turn right onto that first drive, go around to the front of the building where the parent drop-off is, and then they'll come back out to that same location. Right. And by placement of the intersection at that location, we're able to encourage traffic to go out the Pride Mountain Drive way. They'll be able to go straight through as opposed to having to make a left turn and getting back onto Columbia Gorge Parkway.
Yeah, that would seem like something that you could guide people to do. And the bus parking would be in that other lot on the north side of the building?
That's correct.
Or the bus drop-off?
That's correct. There are two entrances there. That is a one-way loop, and so the buses will go down Columbia Gorge Parkway. They'll turn in the westernmost drive, and they'll loop around so that they drop off on the right side of the bus, and then they will go back out. That lot is also for staff parking, and we anticipate about 55 to 60 staff members. The advantage to that is the staff members usually come at a little bit different time than our parent drop-offs. In the morning, there's a lot of overlap, but in the afternoon, there's very little overlap. Usually the parent pickups happen well before staff are leaving the property.
So if that's the staff parking, what's all the parking on the east side for?
Well, with an elementary school, we find a couple of different things. The first is we have an awful lot of folks that don't do a drop-off for their kindergartners, first and second graders. They like to park in the parking lot and take the kiddos in.
I see.
The other thing we've done is, and we've identified with some of our major elementary schools, and we're fortunate here in Columbia, we have a great deal of parent support. So when we have evening events, we have a tremendous parking problem. Some of our locations, Mill Creek Elementary School, for one, it has very limited parking, but they've worked out an arrangement with the church that's immediately across the road, which works out wonderfully. At this location, we don't have that advantage, so we've made sure we have sufficient parking to address that.
So back to the bus entrance, you mentioned a some kind of sort of at least temporary or interim traffic control, I think at the northeast corner of the school property, to only allow buses and residents through?
That's correct. At Howell Mountain Drive, at the intersection of Howell Mountain Drive and Columbia Gorge Parkway, there is a proposal that we in some way barricade that with cones or what have you, so that we don't let any traffic come into the parent drop-off from that route. Right. And so that will discourage that. That will bring people in coming the other way. Now, I suspect, Councilman, that if someone's coming from the north, they will probably turn down Columbia Gorge Parkway because it's the first entrance. They might make the second entrance. But if they do turn on Columbia Gorge Parkway, they immediately hit the traffic circle that's there. They can go around that, get onto Pride Mountain Drive.
I mean, I would think that would be the important place to put signage that indicates the correct way to go to do parent drop-off, left at that traffic circle.
I think I concur with you. One of the things that happens in the elementary schools, and I'm just the engineer, but I was a parent as well, and those first several weeks, they train the parents. Mm-hmm. And so we will be providing, Columbia Public Schools will be providing some maps in showing this is the best way to get in and out of the school as quickly as possible. And that's how we all...
And it
that's
suits,
the incentive.
It suits the residents.
That's correct.
Well. Thank you.
In your traffic study, did you look at any traffic impact from people going on Columbia Gorge that would impact the Woodlands? The entrance is going to be at the other end, so I'm wondering what is the traffic impact that would actually go through the Woodlands to require or still warrant a gate?
Our traffic consultant actually made a footnote in the traffic study that he did not feel that very many folks would take the Woodlands route because of how winding it is through mm-hmm. there. It is an unimproved asphalt roadway, 22 to 24 foot wide. It's about 25 years old, no shoulders, no sidewalks. That's certainly not the type of roadway that if somebody's wanting to get out quick, they go. And so our traffic consultant did not feel like there would be very much traffic. I mean, we can't predict people completely. But that we did not feel like that was going to be a concern.
Thank you.
I just had a couple of questions. I guess these are engineering questions, sort of. But at any rate, one of the implications of what you were saying is there was at least some consensus between the eventual product here and the neighborhood's concerns, particularly as it related to that gated aspect and allowing pedestrian and bicycle travel and so on. So that was one of the things that there tended to be agreement. One of the things that we always have a perennial problem with, particularly when it comes to construction sites, and I was wondering whether or not the residents had raised this issue, is construction traffic almost always deteriorates some of the existing roads in the construction process. Has the school district accommodated? Has this concern been raised? And has the school district accommodated this kind of concern with respect to repairs that are necessary should those roads that are necessary for the construction incur that kind of deterioration?
Absolutely, those are great questions. It did come up. And the city staff was equally as concerned with the roadway, and that's why we have made a commitment in the development agreement that our construction access will be completely off of existing public streets. It will be on the right of ways that our contractor will be responsible for building the school and the roadways, and so he has a responsibility there. We suspect, while we're not dictating how he approaches that, we suspect that he will build those roadways, grade those roadways as a rock base, treat those as a rock construction road during the primary construction of the school, and wait to pave those as public roads, curb and gutter public roads, until the end of the process.
So there's no anticipation that some of these streets are going to be impacted that already exist. I mean, you see this plan as creating the pathways and then eventually building out the roads.
That's correct. And in fact, we will dictate in the contract with the eventual contractor.
Any other questions?
Your permission, Mr. Mayor, yes. I'd like to use what's remaining. You've heard from city staff and representatives of CPS, and I'm not going to walk through everything they talked about. They all did a wonderful job, and I hope they addressed all of your concerns and your questions. All I want to do is just make sure that we make it clear that our objective here for the district is to build a school and educate kids. That's what we're up here doing. That's our main drive here. We've listened to city staff, we've listened to residents, we've worked with the city, with the current property owner, and we've come up with what we see as the best value for the district's dollars. This plan has the recommendation of your staff, and I'd ask that you keep that in mind as we go through the rest of the hearing tonight and you determine how you're going to vote. But I'd also like to point out we're not the only ones that have put a lot of work into this. The city staff has. We're not the only ones that have made concessions. The property owners have also made some concessions. And you're going to hear in a moment from Phoebe Lamar. She's counsel for the property owners for Vineyards Columbia LLC. And she's going to talk to you about what all they've done to help make this project happen. So with that, I'll just conclude by respectfully requesting that the council approve both the revised preliminary plat and the final plat, as well as authorizing the city manager to enter into the development agreement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Phoebe Lamar, and I have offices 111 South 9th Street. I'm here this evening representing the owner of the property that's at issue. My clients, who even if this plan is approved and the sale to Columbia Public Schools is complete, will continue to own the majority of the area that surrounds the school, has since the beginning and still continues to believe that the building of a school in this location will be good for the community, both within and around the Vineyards. As a result, in addition to completing the donation that was previously agreed to with regard to donation of a park, they have also continued to work with the city regarding transferring of additional parkland, including the lake. They've also agreed to make numerous additional concessions designed to make this plan workable for both Columbia Public Schools and the neighbors in the Vineyards. These concessions include such things as taking a substantial reduction in their purchase price, agreeing to make a donation to construction of the playground on the school property, agreement that they will construct the connection between Pride Mountain Drive and Columbia Gorge Parkway before the school opens, where you see that little loop up there between the portion between Oakville Ranch Road and Columbia Gorge. They are actually the ones who are going to be responsible for construction of for the cost of construction of that particular section in order to try to make sure that this can go through and that the access for this will be taken care of. They've also agreed with the city to transfer a lot to them for access to the park at a substantially reduced purchase price, and they've granted rights of way for expansion of roads, and they've actually agreed to remove all of the driveways from Columbia Gorge Parkway. I'd also like to point out in answer to Mr. Thomas's question earlier that if you look at the preliminary plat, note 14 on that preliminary plat actually provides for trail easements that will provide connectivity for both pedestrian access within and within the subdivision and also to the trail. So there will be methods for the kids on the other side of the subdivision to get across the subdivision to get to school. In the process of discussions with the neighbors, both within the Vineyards and in the Woodlands, my clients have been consistently asked about their stance with regard to the emergency exit into the Woodlands and the second access point onto Rolling Hills Road. Neither of these requests were really anything that my clients had control over, so as a result, they never were in a position to take a stance one way or the other on these. But they don't have any objection to what's being asked by either city staff or the neighbors. That it's just not their fight. So whatever you guys want to decide on that is perfectly fine with the owners of this particular piece of property. My clients, as I said earlier, continue to believe that the placement of a school in this location will be beneficial to their community. That means both within and outside of the Vineyards. As such, we request that you approve this proposal. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have this evening. Chris Sander, who is the engineer for the owners, is also here to answer any questions, and Lyndall Perry is actually also present as well.
Any questions from council? Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Would anyone else like to speak?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council. My name is Dale Parker. As the lead speaker of the Woodlands, I'd like to request 5 minutes. Is that yes. Granted? Thank you. Again, 4675 Raccoon Ridge Drive. We have four speakers to address you this evening. John Anderson, Lieutenant General Richard Harding, and I live in the Woodlands, a Boone County subdivision. We've been coordinating the Woodlands subdivision's position and comments related to the new East Elementary School. The Woodlands supports the November 19, 2015 PNZ Commission vote and recommendation. Further, we support the supplemental information letter submitted by the city late last week. Their recommendations include an amendment that the connection of the Woodlands and the Vineyards at Raccoon Ridge be gated and allow for emergency access only, along with pedestrian and bicycle access. This precludes through traffic between the Woodlands and the Vineyards. We do not oppose the location of the school. Our primary issue has been the street configuration, which called for a full connection between the Woodlands and the Vineyards. A full connection would cause significant child and adult pedestrian safety issues, degradation of quality of life to both subdivisions, and it would be inconsistent with and counterproductive to the goals of the Mayor's Task Force on Pedestrian Safety. With a full connection, no parent in our subdivision will allow their children to walk or bike to school on Winding Trail. It's a narrow road with no sidewalks and no streetlights. Both the Woodlands and the Vineyards residents do not want through traffic. We want our children to remain safe, and we oppose the connection other than as emergency access only. With emergency access, parents and children can use Winding Trail and then cross over the pedestrian bicycle entrance into the Vineyards, use their sidewalks, and access the school. Your pre-council packet contained email and paper petitions from 134 homeowners in the Woodlands. They show that 100% oppose through traffic as the connection. During the PNZ Commission discussion of the topic of emergency access, 7 of the 8 commissioners voiced strong support. The 8th commissioner, in his own words, was on the fence. But later, he seconded the motion to add emergency access as an amendment to the plat. That amended plat was approved by a 5-3 vote. The 3 no votes voiced strong support for emergency access only. They voted no for other reasons. We would also like to note that this same issue, as mentioned earlier, came before the PNZ Commission and the City Council in 2005. Both bodies approved the Woodlands proposal for emergency access only connection at that time by unanimous votes. We submitted verbiage to PNZ regarding the emergency access only connection. It was accepted in the meeting, and it was embodied in the PNZ vote to approve the revised plat with our amendment included. When we saw what city staff submitted to City Council on December 7th, the verbiage that was added, it was different than what our submittal was. We worked with City Councilor Nancy Thompson to come up with a reasonable compromise that would satisfy both the city and the Woodlands. That verbiage was included as an amendment to the proposed ordinance in the city's supplemental information letter. I want to talk a little bit about traffic volumes and capacities. Raccoon Ridge connects to Winding Trail, which runs a mile to the south through curves and hills to New Haven and handles the traffic from over 110 Woodlands homes. It was built to county standards at the time, and that was in the mid-1990s. If the Woodlands and the Vineyards were directly connected to allow through traffic, both Raccoon Ridge, which is 23 feet wide today, and Winding Trail at 24 feet, they're going to be functioning as collector roads if this connection happens with a full connection. Collector roads today in the county are constructed to 38 feet wide. Furthermore, the south half of Winding Trail is currently carrying over 1,000 average daily traffic trips, although it was designed to carry less than 750. Think of it this way. If a developer were applying to build Winding Trail now, after the Vineyards, and connect that, they'd be required to build that 38 feet wide. Clearly, adding additional traffic is a major issue for the Woodlands residents. All of our comments tonight are in support of the city's amendment for gated emergency access only. Any questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm John Anderson. I live in the Woodlands at 4525 East Raccoon Ridge Drive. Columbia Public Schools leadership has been supportive of the Woodlands emergency access only position, as evidenced by an email from that Dale Parker received from Superintendent Dr. Peter Stiepelman. And I quote, "We will continue to be your supporter when it comes to an emergency entrance only connection. I drove your neighborhood again and absolutely understand how traffic, even marginal traffic, would markedly change your current situation." Let me show you why he would reach that conclusion. We have a few pictures here, and the old saying is a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, in this case, I think it's worth a lot more than a thousand words. These pictures depict three different road situations. The first is the Columbia City Standard for a Collector Road. It's 32 feet wide. It's got curbs and sidewalks. Shown are two vehicles and two children. You can see that this appears safe for both vehicles and children. Next is the current county standard for a collector road. It's 38 feet wide, but no curbs or sidewalks. Even so, it's very wide, and both vehicles and children fit easily with room to spare. I just remind you again that the Woodlands is in Boone County. Next, this is the same vehicles and children on Raccoon Ridge, 23 feet wide, winding trails 24 feet wide. I hope that you can really see the problem and danger and why we oppose through traffic and a direct connection. The Raccoon Ridge picture supports the statement Dale made that if the direct connection is made, no Woodlands parent will let their child walk or ride bikes to the new school. In other words, the direct connection will achieve the reverse of what is intended for school walkability. Widening Raccoon Ridge and winding trail to 38 feet is not a viable option, as it would involve the relocation of all underground utilities, sewers, and major drainage rework, part of which would likely have to be underground. This is neither economically viable, our estimates are over $4 million from reliable commercial contractors, nor desirable to the Woodlands residents, and the community disruption would be enormous. So in my closing, we ask that you vote in favor and support the city's amendment for gated emergency access only.
Thank you.
Questions?
I'm Chris Kiley, and I live at 4650 East Raccoon Ridge. And I just wanted to talk a little more about the gated access, obviously. Rational people could validly disagree on how much additional traffic would flow through the Vineyards and the Woodlands if the subdivisions are connected to allow through traffic. We would just argue that the schools generate a significant amount of traffic other than just the mad scrabble of drop-off and pick-up and other people's destinations afterwards. There are visitors, vendors, workmen, UPS, FedEx, etc., coming and going all times. Also, it is certain that some amount of the non-school through traffic will occur. The potential of adding through traffic to the Woodlands has generated a great deal of passion in our subdivisions over the last 7 months. The reason for that passion is this project has a significant potential impact on where we live, our homes, our neighborhoods, and our families. Subdivisions in most cases, and specifically in the case of the Woodland and the Vineyards, are designed to safeguard residents' tranquility, peaceful use of property, and safety of the residents, both the young and the old alike. Adding through traffic to such a subdivision actually destroys the peace, tranquility, and safety of the community. Through traffic, no matter what the volume, does not show the same respect for the speed limits or the same courtesy to the pedestrians and the children as is exhibited by the subdivision residents. That alone changes the residents' peaceful use and enjoyment of the neighborhood. City planners have stated that the direct connection between the Woodlands and the Vineyards is partly needed to protect future purchasers of the homes in our subdivision who may desire the direct connection. There is no evidence to support this speculation, and we believe the opposite to be true. The Woodland attracts the residents that values that space, limited traffic, low noise, and the right to peaceful use and enjoyment of their property. Of the 78 homes that accessed Winding Trail 10 years ago, approximately 30 have new owners. Additionally, a phase of 29 new homeowners has been added since 2005. All these new owners desire emergency access only and not through a connection to the Vineyards. This evidence strongly supports the conclusion that the future owners in the Woodlands will want the same emergency access only. With the second direct connection to the new school from Rolling Hills, there is no need for a through traffic connection between the Woodlands and the Vineyards in order to route traffic to and from the new school. Again, a through traffic connection is opposed by residents of both the subdivisions. Please approve the city submitted amendment for the gated emergency access only.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lieutenant General Rich Harding. I'm an Air Force officer, retired. I live in the Woodlands at 4367 East Ravens Ridge Drive. And I'd like to address just very briefly some safety concerns if through traffic is added connecting the Vineyards with the Woodlands. The original justification for connecting the two neighborhoods was, and still remains, to permit children to walk or to ride their bicycles through the Woodlands to and from the new school. We ask you carefully consider the child safety risk inherent in encouraging young children to ride bicycles or to walk to school from the Woodlands on Winding Trail to Raccoon Ridge Drive and then down an open connecting road to the new school. As children walk or ride their bicycles to and from the new school on these roads, they would face a heavy volume of automobile traffic. The vehicle traffic on Winding Trail is already, as mentioned, well over capacity. Connecting the two developments with an open road would encourage more than just vehicle, child safety, and bicycle traffic on these roads to and from the school. It would also encourage through traffic having nothing to do with reaching the school. Woodlands roads are narrow. They have no shoulders. They have no sidewalks. They have no street lighting. And they curve through wooded areas and hills, making early detection of pedestrians, especially children, challenging for the best of motorists. Encouraging young children 10 and under to ride their bicycles or to walk on this narrow road, congested with additional automobile traffic, without shoulders, without sidewalks, without adequate street lighting, and sometimes with standing water in the roadway, fails to protect the safety of children. No child should be injured or worse killed because the road that they were encouraged to use on foot or with a bicycle was well known to be unsafe. Children are injured and killed all too often in unpredictable and surprising ways. They certainly should not be injured or killed in ways that were entirely foreseeable and avoidable. No child should be injured or killed in the name of neighborhood connectivity. In summary, to sum up what all of us have said, if the roads between the Woodlands and the Vineyards are connected and open for public use, we do indeed have a dangerous situation. We are already over capacity and additional automobile traffic is unsafe for pedestrians, especially our children. The proposed emergency access only connection provides a third access point into both neighborhoods for fire, police, and emergency services without adding through traffic. It also allows for pedestrian and bicycle traffic between the two neighborhoods without increasing automobile traffic. Please, therefore, approve the amendment submitted by the city for gated emergency access only. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Christina Gaddy, 1806 Moss Creek Court, President Vineyards HOA. Thank you for your time this evening.
I'm going to try to keep this extremely short. We support the new elementary. However, when you build a school, you build the proper roads. It seems really simple. The majority of the traffic will need to go north, but there's only one way out of our subdivision. Our only concerns have been traffic flow and safety, not only for the residents, but for all those using the school in the future. Other residents will be explaining in more detail, but our main concerns and points. As the slow shows, there's a lot more cars coming through the vineyards, and the majority of traffic will be coming from the north. Allowing for a second north access from Oakville Ranch Road would enhance the flow of traffic out of both the school and the neighborhood. Controlling the parent traffic versus bus traffic as a way to minimize the effect of increased traffic and walkability of the residents. This has been proposed, but we haven't seen anything that this will actually be happening. In summary, we hope you will see, understand, and agree that our points and concerns make sense. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Lisa Pryor, and I live at 5100 Columbia Gorge. My husband and I live there. It's on the corner of Howell Mountain in Columbia Gorge. Our concern is traffic. The current proposal is to allow traffic to enter on Columbia Gorge, our only neighborhood access entrance, and a new road, Oakville Ranch. However, traffic only will only be allowed to turn left out of Columbia Gorge. Please remember that currently a vast majority, if not all of the traffic for this school will be coming from WW, which is to the north. New Haven picks up the school traffic to the south. Please know that the school anticipates over 400 cars entering and exiting the neighborhood in the morning and the same in the afternoon. That means 400 cars will be turning left out of Columbia Gorge. The current plan hinders us from safely leaving our neighborhood twice a day. A fix to this problem is to allow a left turn out of Columbia Ranch, as indicated by the red arrows on this slide. At least it allows two streets from which to turn left. It is our understanding the school takes no position on this, which means they are not opposed to it. This is strictly a city staff issue. There are vineyard residents that are very familiar with the traffic engineering. We know the MUTCD, which is the traffic Bible essentially, calls for 1,000 feet between left turns. It does not mandate that. We know this would be about 800 feet in this particular area. We also know that there are many, many instances where a variance is granted to that. There are no other close intersections that add to the issue near Columbia Gorge. Thank you. There is an example of this particular solution. The closest example to this location includes Pergola Drive and Morning Drive on Rolling Hills, which is the first and second streets as you go north on Rolling Hills and cross over WW. These are old Hawthorne entrances, the subdivision up that way. The first will be commercial use, the second mainly residential. This is almost exactly the same use as what Columbia Gorge and Oakville Ranch would be. They both allow left turns out of that subdivision, and they are just under 800 feet apart. In addition, please note, Pergola Drive has a broken median to allow for left turns. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Kim Goldberg. I reside at 2109 Augustburg Drive, which is on the corner of Augustburg Drive and Columbia Gorge Parkway. Our most basic request is to avoid excess school traffic through the Vineyards roundabout that onto Columbia Gorge Parkway. It is the only entrance into our neighborhood. It's the only way we can get to our homes. The Vineyards is a very social community, and enjoy walking with our children through the neighborhood, with our pets, and developing neighborly relationships. As parents, we know the morning rush involved in dropping kids off in the morning and then picking them up in the afternoons. We are aware that we all drive all the time without accident. However, there's no reason to incur these risks in the Vineyards roundabout as it is designed for residential traffic. We also require signage designating the entrance for the school at Oakville Ranch. The sign is not foolproof, of course, but will people drive people to use that entry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Beth Riggard. I reside at 1605 Ballantyne Lane in the Vineyards. Wanted to follow up with some of the comments that other residents have made, and specifically addressing some of the concerns that Councilwoman Peters and Councilman Thomas raised about traffic and ingress and egress. This is one of the southernmost sites that had been considered by the Columbia Public Schools. I understand that they haven't yet drawn what boundaries and know for sure where children will be coming from, but as Mr. Thomas noted, certainly they'll be coming from the north side of the Vineyards, and currently there is no way for children there to get to this site other than to go down WW and Rolling Hills. It's also likely that children will be coming from Old Hawthorne, also to the north, accessing WW, which that intersection, as Ms. Thomas noted, is dangerous. There was an injury accident there just Friday night. There was a fatality there in March, so the concern about traffic is not unwarranted. The traffic study itself that Mr. Tabu discussed earlier indicated that this was sufficient. What he didn't indicate is what they told us is that sufficient is a D rating. I would think that we're building a school. We would hope that the school children would do better than a D, and no one would consider that to be sufficient. So we are concerned about both the immediate and the long-term effects of safety, given that it's a D rating for that long-term effect. The other issue with the ingress and egress out of Oakville Ranch is that Oakville Ranch is actually at a place on Rolling Hills that's flatter, so you actually have better sight lines as to traffic coming from the south. Where Columbia Gorge currently comes out, it's actually just over the crest of the hill, so anyone coming from the south toward the north, you're going to be at a little bit of a disadvantage right there, being able to see traffic. So the idea of using Columbia Gorge as the only way out on a left turn is actually, in my mind, more dangerous than Oakville Ranch, given the sight lines. And I know there has been some discussion of maybe a traffic signal that might help alleviate it, but that doesn't appear to be something that's in front of you right now. So as a result, I'm not sure that I would agree with Mr. Tribune that Oakville Ranch is an immediate relief valve for people wanting to turn north. I really think that you should consider an amendment to allow left turns out of both Columbia Gorge and Oakville Ranch, because Oakville Ranch appears to be the safer option. We appreciate the considerations that the Columbia Public Schools have given to the community over the last few months, especially with some of the signage and attempt to control the traffic within the subdivision. We look forward to being able to work with them in the future on this, and we are happy about the school coming, but again, we would ask the council to consider amending this proposal tonight to require a full access north turn out of Oakville Ranch. I note that that is being used in construction. They will be able to turn left, but parents won't. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Not. I will close the public hearing. Council discussion.
I just have a question of staff before we start this, and then this has come up a couple of times in the testimony, first with Mr. Tribu and then with the last speaker. Personally, I thought it was a pretty good idea to have a dedicated left turn into its own lane and then have a straight through traffic way. Is that a possibility for this other access? I mean, what is the staff opinion in terms of, I mean, since this road, it's the same road, and there is still a possibility of doing that as well, is there something that contraindicates that might be a good idea?
We have weaving concerns with the closeness of that. As you two-stage maneuver, it's not as safe, and so that is the concern, is that weaving movement between the two drives.
So the justification is it's less than 1,000 feet between the two. But there is that other exception. These things sometimes are accepted, and there is a sight distance issue that this last speaker alluded to as well. So,
yeah, it's just staff's opinion. It's not as safe in that with that left turn.
Thank you.
Any is other discussion by council?
Don't we have an amendment?
I have a question. You know, once this school goes in, are we not going to be looking at traffic patterns after that? So if it turns out that there's too much traffic turning north off Columbia Gorge, that you could put a left-hand turn in or a light? I mean, is this like permanent? And once we make this decision, we will never go back and look at Rolling Hills again?
Oh, well, we always evaluate. A light does not work space-wise on, for the flow as Rolling Hills is designated as a minor arterial. What was mentioned earlier, further south, if the development to the south occurs, we would then likely put in a signal at that point. That is a midpoint between WW and New Haven, and that would be in a long-range plan at that point. Yes, when we move forward with Rolling Hills in the future, all the intersections will be evaluated, as the expansion occurs. And the appropriate treatment will be analyzed and engineered at that time.
Thank you.
Will there be any evaluation of the intersection there at WW and Rolling Hills? I travel that way on my way to Millersburg, and I do know traffic's going very fast on WW, and now increasing the traffic for people getting to the school. That intersection doesn't quite seem to be adequate for
WW. Rolling Hills was part of a development plan with Old Hawthorne.
Okay.
We have seen plans for a signal, and we've also seen plans for a roundabout. The developer is working toward one of those solutions soon, and okay. I don't have exact time, but there have been some interest in getting that moving.
Okay, so soon, probably within the next several years, not 10 years our CIP planning.
The actual signal plans were approved, and a permit was issued by MoDOT several years ago, and there was discussion for him to consider a roundabout. He did do a design of a roundabout, and I believe those have been approved also by MoDOT, and so we are in conversation with him on what type intersection he's going to propose.
But the city hasn't put any kind of time limit on when that
it is not going to be a city project.
No,
I
know, but as far as when we went through all the planning process.
At this time, we are encouraging him to move faster if possible.
Thank you.
Dave?
Go ahead.
The roundabout on Columbia Gorge, is that large enough to accommodate buses?
Yeah, I believe it is. I'm not sure. It's probably got the...
No, you guys are smiling.
Probably
so
got
what
the
is...
truck apron that is mountable, and that's how roundabouts are. It probably won't track within the same of as a car, but on the inside of our roundabout designs is an inch and a half
mountable
curb that tracks that back tire. So.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Well, we have the gated access amendment on 347-15. May I have a motion and a second to amend B 347-15 per the amendment sheet?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion on the gated access amendment.
I think the gated access amendment's a good idea. Nobody really wants access through there of vehicles, but it would be nice to have kids be able to get through there, and that's what this seems to accommodate.
Any other comments?
Go ahead, Colin.
Just a couple of comments. I've been around here long enough to know that I was on the Planning and Zoning Commission in 2005 when this was first proposed, and reading this is kind of like deja vu when you go back all that way. But nonetheless, I was always a proponent, and a lot of us were, of connectivity between neighborhoods. But this has some other issues to it. And one of the issues, obviously, is it's a school, it has school children, it has drop-offs, it has those kinds of traffic considerations. And I think the main the impetus for this and the emergency gate, obviously, for emergencies, but the ability of these school children to either access across this gate, if you will, with on foot or by bicycle, I think solves that problem. Seems to me that it's a reasonable thing. Not only that, but both sides tend to accommodate it, and that kind of consensus is a rare thing in this chamber. So I'm happy to support it, and certainly on that basis, I think it's a reasonable thing, and I'm glad that the two sides could come together, at least with respect to that issue.
Yeah, I support it too. I understand the value of street connectivity in general. Unfortunately, our traffic levels have got to the point where it would place an unsafe and extreme burden on those streets in the Woodlands. I'm very encouraged by the whole conversation here, with a strong focus on doing everything we can to enable the children that live within half a mile or a mile, and there's going to be a lot of them in the Woodlands and in the Vineyards, to be able to walk or bike to school. And I really encourage the school and the neighborhood associations and the families to find ways to really enhance and promote that. One of the things I would suggest with regard to the emergency access is that this is not just a like yellow and black barrier that kind of can go up and down when that some design landscape architect kind of work goes into this to make it a very welcoming, attractive bicycle pedestrian connection that flows through, and the necessary, you know, emergency access technical components to allow emergency vehicles to go through. I really hope that this school will have a very high proportion of kids walking and biking.
Any other discussion on the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The amendment passes 7-0. Any more discussion on either of the bills?
Well, I think we want to. I would like to discuss a possible amendment to change the access at Oakville Ranch and Rolling Hills. That would require an amendment, right, to allow full access left and right turns, or is that more of an administrative decision at a later point?
The development agreement right now does say that after the school opens, it becomes a three-quarter, which means right. Left turn in, no left turn out. So that's the way the development agreement
if we
reads
pass,
now, and that's part of the prelim plat bill.
So if we pass the two bills as they are right now, then there will be no left turn access out of Oakville Ranch.
Yeah, and it's 3A of the development agreement. Public improvements to be provided by a developer, and then paragraph A is the school district will design and construct a second access road. And that paragraph concludes that after completion of the elementary school site, the southern access road and Rolling Hills Road shall be converted into a three-quarters access intersection. And that's okay. Subject to Mr. Nichols' approval.
Before you go ahead with it, can I just ask a question? And that is just following up on that line of reasoning that I was using before, assuming there was an amendment and this was passed, is there some way to stipulate, or would it be wise to stipulate the idea that we would have the same kind of left-turning system on this other secondary road that we did on the other? Because it seems to me like that's a good idea to have a dedicated left-turn lane.
Receiving lane.
Receiving lane with through traffic going in, straight through. And I think that maybe that could be part of the amendment as well, if there is an amendment on the table.
Would there be enough room, though, with only 800 feet?
Oh, it's the same. Oh, it's not between the two. It's just the width of the road, right? Isn't that the rate limit?
It does create a weaving movement that you have as a two-stage, and you would try to get through that next intersection in a transition two-stage move out of that going north. And it's staff's opinion, it's just not as safe. I mean, from a short-term standpoint, it would work, but from staff has concerns at a long-term standpoint.
Okay,
that movement.
Let me ask you this question. So the staff thinks that it's just not safe. I get that. Which would be the least safe in order to have a dedic? If in fact the council did decide that there were two left turn lanes warranted, would it be more safe to have one without the receiving lane dedicated left for the secondary and the other one with one, or both have?
Yeah, I think because of the collector status of Columbia Gorge, that it needs to have that left turn moving
out of
there.
You'd need it. Okay.
Sorry, say that again, Dave. It needs to have
the design that we were proposed.
The receiving lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just staff's opinion about the distance being tight there.
So is the main issue the fact that if you did that same design at Oakville Ranch and had a you would have a, if you did do a allow left turns, you would want to put the receiving lane there, same as at Columbia Gorge, correct?
Yeah, and as that left turn continued north, then it would conflict with that northbound trying to get into the gorge.
Is it another option to prohibit left turns in at Columbia Gorge and only allow left turns in at Oakville Ranch?
Strict left turns in?
Correct.
Yeah, that...
Well, no, they come in at Oakville Ranch.
I'm sure that would be desirable from other residents either.
So there's a conflict. So let's talk about the amount of traffic then. I know you didn't do the traffic study, or at least the study that led to the estimate of 400 cars. I don't know, Linda, if you're familiar, or Tom. What did that assume regarding most of the car traffic is going to be from the kids living closer than a mile, because the ones beyond a mile get bus transportation. So what did that assume regarding walking or biking among the kids that live right in all of these neighborhoods?
Well,
how accurate is that number, do you say?
Well, it's reasonably accurate. What we do is we utilize the ITE Traffic Institute studies for this type of activity, for traffic studies. What we found in Columbia, though, is we look at Mill Creek Elementary School. That is one of the most congested schools from a parent drop-off standpoint. The parent drop-off at that location is approximately 30% above what is recognized by the ITE Traffic Institute. And so we actually utilize that for our traffic projections. And so as opposed to using some standard, we used an actual application that we have here in our community. What the traffic study indicated is that we would have 225 additional cars entering in the AM peak hour. We would have 225 cars exiting in the afternoon peak hour. There's another 165 cars that fits in there that gets us to that 400, because we have 225 coming in, we have 165 going out.
Okay, to explain that.
Okay. So we
225
and I apologize, cars? I didn't do that very well. So in the AM,
right,
and we're looking at just Columbia Gorge Parkway, because at the time we did not consider Oakville Ranch Drive at all. So we considered 220. The school generates 225 cars additional coming into Columbia Gorge Parkway.
Right. Parents dropping off kids.
Parents dropping off kids, buses, and staff.
Right.
And you'll recognize that we had 60 staff members. Well, those 60 staff members don't go back out
right
in the morning.
Got it.
It's only the parents.
So, so we're really talking about 225 in and about 165 out.
That's correct.
Added, if your projections are correct.
That's correct.
So that would be 160 vehicles trying to turn, many of them trying to turn left at Columbia Gorge, within probably a 15, 20-minute time span.
It actually spreads out to be about a 30 to 40-minute time span for parent drop-offs. It varies a little bit. The morning is a little bit tighter. The afternoon is a little bit more protracted. And again, it's very difficult to identify exactly what the mix of traffic going north and south will be.
Mm-hmm.
We predict it based on what the existing traffic counts are. But we do understand that will change. We don't know. Some of the anecdotal evidence indicated that an awful lot of folks that drop their kids off in the morning actually go south, that they either
right
work in Jeff City, they work on the south side of town, they go down to New Haven Road. Those are those types of
they
things.
They could
that
leave
we
on Oakville Ranch and turn right and head down to
correct
Highway 63.
That's correct.
Is it a possibility to not decide the question until a later date when the new school maps are drawn and there's a better idea of what the traffic's likely to be, north or south?
Yes, you can always, I'll jump in here. You can always change how traffic moves. You have that purview. Now, whether you add a lane or not, that's something you kind of want to get to know.
And actually, maybe just backing up a bit, if we were to want to allow left turns out of Oakville Ranch now, somebody would have to pay for that. Presumably that would cost more. Who would pay for that?
Well, I guess my advice is we're talking about, quite frankly, so few cars that it doesn't warrant an extra lane. But if you think about the future and growth, you may want that.
Well, you're saying so few cars, but the residents of Vineyards are worried about being trapped in if they need to try to leave at the time that all the parent cars are leaving.
I know it sounds like a lot, but quite frankly, it's just not a lot of cars. The traffic, many more cars than that travel through most of the intersections in Columbia every day. So it's I know for the neighborhood it will feel like a big change, but you know, it's empirically, it's not a lot of volume.
I think I can address that a little bit, Councilman Thomas, with the traffic study. Right now there's about 40 to 45 homes constructed in the Vineyards. With the remaining lots, taking out the lots that the school is absorbing, there would be about 140 additional lots. Just the background traffic from the residential neighborhood will increase the traffic by a factor of 4 or 5.
Right.
And so that gives you some indication that this, I mean, and we have lots of developments that have 180, 200, 300 lots that are served by an intersection like this, to Mr. Mathis's point.
So if we go with the plan as is, and there's 160-odd cars trying to leave and many of them turning left, plus the current residents and the new homeowners, once
that's
all of
correct.
That is built out, I think that's going to be up to something like 300 or 400 vehicles leaving in the morning, or it's probably hard to say one vehicle per house. It may be more than that. But you're saying that in your experience, this kind of volume can be managed pretty easily by the intersection design and the single exit for people wanting to go north.
Yes, that's what our traffic consultant indicated. And again, we were just looking at one intersection. With the second intersection and the ability to have a lot of that traffic going, if somebody's going south, they will certainly take that southern access, or we would anticipate that, and a number of folks would in that regard.
Okay, thank you.
Just kind of a question and a follow-up. I'm kind of intrigued, not only with your idea that we could remediate this later should there be another problem, and we might ought to consider going with what is suggested at this point, calculating the potential for that remediation if it's necessary, because it seems to me like this is a reasonably compelling argument that the traffic can be handled. We don't know if there's going to be a problem at this point, and we don't know exactly when the timetable is going to be built out for the rest of those residential lots. So this may not be a problem at this point, but if it is, we certainly have the capacity to fix it.
That's correct. We look at traffic projections to 23, and I don't know why the traffic guys chose 23 years. That's their magic number. The city and their traffic studies, I think they look at 28 or 30 years for their projections. And again, we both came to the conclusion that that we had adequate capacity to do that. Now, things do change, but we factored in a reasonably aggressive growth rate, which is what we do in the city of Columbia, to do that. The one thing we will be doing, you know, Columbia Gorge Parkway is Rolling Hills Road is 4-lane. From WW down to Columbia Gorge Parkway. We will be picking up and doing some modifications to that intersection to put this receiving left turn lane, restriping that, configuring to the 4-lane situation at that point. Going south to Oakville Ranch Drive, the entire rest of the way we are projecting adding another lane. So there will be 3 lanes there. There will be,
as part of this project,
and we've built that into the project.
To create the left turn lane into Columbia Gorge.
That's correct. And more importantly, to complete a consistent through lane going north. We would have room to add a lane just at Oakville Ranch for the left turn in, and then weave back into a 2-lane situation and weave back out. It's really tight. It doesn't make any sense.
the Public Works Department would not agree to that. I wouldn't agree to it if I was in their shoes. So we are looking at a three-lane situation there. The concern that Mr. Nichols has indicated, again, is we do have that middle lane that is a left turn lane. If we had folks coming out of that left turn lane at Oakville Ranch and getting into that, their desire would to get into the right through lane. At the same time, people that are going to be turning left into Columbia Gorge Parkway are trying to cross that. And it's a very short distance for that type of weaving motion. But as we've discussed it with the city staff, you know, we have looked at this as a three-quarter intersection, as Mr. Nichols indicated, and we work with them a lot. They consistently review the traffic counts at all of their intersections, and changing that to allow a left turn in the future, if it makes sense, is a viable possibility. As the, I don't want to put words into their mouth, but I'm at the mic, so what's ahead? I don't get this opportunity often. How you, there you go. The mayor's going to put the timer back on in a minute. But certainly, as Rolling Hills Road is developed as a four-lane roadway, all of those intersections, as Mr. Nichols indicated, will be reevaluated as to what's appropriate. Certainly, the extension of Howe Mountain Drive through that unplatted property to the south and eventually another connection at Rolling Hills Road is a very compelling thing. Now, we don't know when that's going to happen, but we do know that as Rolling Hills Road develops, the city, as part of their development plans on Rolling Hills Road, will be identifying specifically that location, whether development has caught up with that or not, which is the case that, you know, the city staff has been very progressive in trying to do that in recent years to do that longer-term planning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So just to be clear, if we vote on this as is and approve it, it doesn't preclude making Oakville Ranch a full access entrance exit at some point in the future?
No, it does not preclude that.
Any other discussion? If not, let's call the roll on B-34715.
Council Bill 34715 as amended. Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Call the roll on 34815.
Council Bill 34815, Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Please read 34915.
Council Bill 34915 is an ordinance authorizing a contract for sale of real estate with the Housing Authority of the City of Columbia for the purchase of property located 115 Lynn Street, 107 Lynn Street, 105 Lynn Street, 700 Oak Street, and 104 West Sexton Road, authorizing a contract for sale of real estate with the Columbia Community Housing Trust for the purchase of property located at 106 West Sexton Road, 108 West Sexton Road, and 110 West Sexton Road, directing the city clerk to have the contracts recorded and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
This is a contract item. These are lots owned by the Columbia Housing Authority. They're interested in selling those to the city. Three of the lots are to be sold for $0. Those are lots that the council might recall the city donated to CHA when they were interested in combining them with the other five as possible tax credit funded project to be called McQuitty Square. CHA has since developed other priorities. They now are asking the city to buy five lots for the agreed-on price of $120,355. So that's five lots that would be sold for that price, and then three additional that would be a separate contract for $0, making a total of eight lots. These are located south of Sexton, west of Garth. The addresses are 105, 107, 115 Lynn Street, and those are on either side of that PUD that we described on December 7th, which is three other city-owned lots. And then 700 Oak, 104 106, 108, and 110 West Sexton, making up those lots. There is an amendment sheet, and the amendment sheet changes the closing date from New Year's Eve to Leap Year Day. So. And Mr. Cole is here to answer questions you might have about the background of this acquisition. We view this as really a long-term asset for the city. It is in that central strategic plan area that was just presented to council at work session. There's been neighborhood input taken and a lot of interest in a number of neighborhood development or neighborhood serving uses, including infrastructure and amenities and affordable housing.
So we're going to spend, where's the $100,000 coming from?
Purchase price. Those are community development block grant reserves.
So this is not from the general fund?
Right.
It's not.
So basically, the money, weren't these lots purchased by the Columbia Housing Authority from CDBG money?
No. From their own resources.
No.
So this is dedicated CDBG money for this type of purchase. Okay.
And Randy, is one of the thoughts with some or all of these lots to ultimately vest them into a community land trust and comment on that? And if that's correct, how would that work?
We held a neighborhood meeting back in October. We really wanted to approach the neighborhood and get their input on what they want to see developed there before we come up with any kind of formal plans. From that meeting, you know, we do have the PUD there on Lynn Street. From that meeting, I got the sense, and we certainly do some more need to do some more clarification with the neighborhood, but I got the general sense that Lynn Street, yes, they would want to see more affordable housing developed on that street. And what came out of that meeting was owner-occupied. There was consensus that they wanted owner-occupied, and the land trust idea came up, as it does often in a lot of our public sessions, is something the community wants to see.
And what would be the steps to creating that land trust, or give some examples of how we might proceed with that and how it would operate if these properties were part of that?
Sure. We're looking at doing that on the first four homes there on the Lynn Street PUD. Right now we're at a point where, you know, we have the zoning approved. We need to do some additional planning on what that entity is going to look like and what it's going to be under. You know, it'll take a broad community discussion. I'm at the point where I would recommend it being a separate 501c3 served by the city for at least the first 3 years to get it off the ground.
When you say served by the city, we would act as sort of the board of directors or something like that?
We would staff it. And again, this is just my own opinions, so there's probably some other opinions out there. But yeah, I've met with other cities that have done similar efforts. We held a conference call with a national leader on land trusts this last Friday with our accounting staff, legal staff, myself, and Tim. And that was of his opinion that there's a lot of cities that have started this and have been very successful, but did recommend that separation as a good way to go.
Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, would the land trust have an independent board of directors? Would they be appointed by the city council? What kind of overview would
be? I would certainly recommend it have a separate board of directors. And kind of the standard nationwide that seems to be the most effective, in my personal opinion, is where the board is represented by people that live in those structures, at least a third, as well as people that live in the neighborhoods around those developments. It can be scattered sites, so it could be, you know, citywide. And then also some representation from the private sector professional sides, like a lender, a realtor, and then also someone from like a city council person or a community development director of that sorts. So you get a broad-ranging board with expertise and also a good representation of our community. There's different ways to get that board formed from the get-go. You know, from what I've read, there's different trigger points where you bring on your people that are living in houses. Some organizations say once we have 5 houses, once we have 10 houses, you know, whatever that number is, that's when we'll start bringing on the people that live in the houses, because it's kind of a chicken and the egg issue. Do you create the houses first, or do you you know, create your board first. In my opinion, we need to get some houses done so that way we can start gaining a pool of buyers that can help make up that board. But yeah.
And then once some properties are, I guess, the lease, the titles are owned by the new 501c3, how would selling and actual buildings on those properties work?
You know, that's a good question. There's some different permutations of how it can be done, and that's really guided by your bylaws and the specific land lease you have. But most of the land trust organizations that I've talked with, met with, and went to the National Land Trust Conference back in October, they sell the structure itself and maintain ownership of the land with a 99-year ground lease. So that way the land trust entity can backstop any issues if there's any issues with foreclosure or property maintenance issues. And then also it greatly reduces the price of the home because you take the land cost out of the deal, so they're just paying for the structure. So certainly we have to do some education on our banks. We do have a couple of local banks that are very interested in the concept and supportive of it and see its value, as well as some local developers. But yeah, so the bank would hold a loan just like they would on any typical market rate mortgage, and those loans do sell to Fannie. Fannie does buy those loans. And then the city would guarantee those loans. So in the event of a foreclosure or something of that nature, the city, or what I think should be the entity, the land trust, and he could come in, make payments until you take that person and get them in a better housing situation that they can handle, say a rental property, and then you look for another buyer to replace that.
And then there'd be staff with the entity, so there needs to be some kind of funding stream to pay those staff costs.
Certainly. Right now I'm pretty comfortable with our staffing for at least 3 years. We expanded from 3 to 4. Certainly down the road, that would have to be taken into account as your bank of land grows. Most housing trust houses sell similarly to the market. They change over every 7 years. So every 7 years, you're gonna have a new buyer that you need to requalify and get in there. I've been talking with folks down in the city of Springfield. They've had their land trust up and running for I think close to 5 years now, and they've just had their first resale that they're managing. So it's been interesting to talk to other folks around the country that are at different points. But I think we're very well positioned with the expansion of our 3 staff to 4.
Right. Thanks, Randy.
I just had a question. You're very schooled on this, went to, and have been talking to a lot of people about this, and I regard your opinion as very important to guide some of these discussions. But I see that we're going to have a couple of immediate discussions. One's going to be sooner rather than later because we have those 4 properties and so on, and we've been talking about that, and we need to at least have the report and for the interim, the 3-year period that you're talking about, the in-house part and how we handle that. And we're also going to have a more robust discussion with the community because there has been a good deal of interest in this in the banking community and so on and so forth as to what these boards will eventually look like and what the makeup is. So I guess that the question is, I'm asking the city manager that we need to get some of this pretty soon, if necessary, ask for these reports so that we can anticipate what's going to be going on, since this is a kind of a continuation of something that we've already started. And I would like to know what is going on in that interim 3-year period, at least for starters.
I could answer real quick. We had that meeting last Friday with the consultant from Burlington Associates. He's helped set these up across the country for the last 20 years. If you look at their company, they literally have written a book on this from both a land trust operator and a consultant. So I'm of the opinion it would be good to bring someone in like that. They have templates for strategic plans, bylaws, ground leases, and they've helped set these up across the country. So that could be an approach. I think we definitely need to have a public input session, maybe a council work session, but probably more of a neighborhood session to approach the neighborhood about these different options for what it looks like, get some feedback on what different permutations of the bylaws and ground lease seem the most acceptable to them.
And just to underscore, I really view this as a parallel track. I think we can work on both things. You know, it's really not build the houses and then we'll start working on the, I think we'd work on both, and it may very well be they cross the finish line together, so to speak. But I think it's not an either or. I think it
would just be nice to have a little bit better understanding than what the short term is about, since we are going down this road. We're starting to go down this road, and it affects how we make future decisions about the properties we buy and what we're going to do with them and so on. So I'd appreciate some more information and to pick your brain as well as far as that goes.
We buy this land with community development block grant money. Could it be sold to the private sector? Could it be given to
there are some,
humanity?
There are a lot of steps for that to meet that compliance. So that it's possible, but highly unlikely. If you have to meet a national objective with CDBG funding, meaning you have to serve families that are at or below 80% the area median income. So to roll that back out, you'd have to pay back that money to HUD, and you don't want to go that route. If we touch it with HUD funds, typically it needs to serve the families that it's intended to serve for.
I think you said Habitat for Humanity, or that.
What about an organization that builds affordable housing?
I'm sorry. What was the question?
Sale to Habitat or another agency that builds for.
If we sell this land to Habitat or Job Point, is that the question?
Yeah.
It would have to. It would still have to meet a national objective of HUD.
But that's what they normally do. Job
yeah.
Points and
yeah, we do that.
And, be a way to assist.
Habitat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it wouldn't preclude that.
Certainly.
So it's unlikely a for-profit entity would ever take this on, but there are organizations in the business of affordable housing that could potentially.
Yeah, this has to be, it has to remain in the affordable housing stock in some fashion or another, and whoever deals with that would be a potential buyer if the city continue.
We could certainly work with a private developer on the development, though.
So if for whatever reason we didn't buy this land, what would happen to it?
You know, it would stay with the housing authority, and they would work out if they're going to try to do another tax credit project, you know, 3, 5, 6, 7 years from now. I don't know. It's kind of a hypothetical, and it would be out of my control, so I don't know what would happen.
Any other questions before we open it up to the public? Would anyone in the public like to speak? Seeing them, we'll go to council discussion. I think I've already expressed my skepticism. I'm not going to do it again. I'm just, I have more confidence with the Columbia Housing Authority. This is what they do. And we're setting up a second infrastructure to manage this. I don't know, maybe you guys do it pretty well, but there's a lot of things in city government we don't do well. And I know I'll be in the minority, but I'm going to just state my skepticism by opposing this project.
I didn't say anything last time, but I want to challenge those statements. The Housing Authority also decided to move forward in a land trust structure because that's the one that makes sense. There's a wide path of success using this route. It keeps land that you create, because some portion of the affordable housing units that we've created through our federal pass-through funds, CDBG and home funds, are no longer in the affordable housing. They are in rental housing, because some of those houses, they fulfilled their loan obligations that we helped an income-eligible person into affordable housing. They served their obligation, and then they sold it on the open market, and now it's just another piece of rental housing. The land trust model locks in the affordable housing into perpetuity, which is going to be a wonderful, beautiful gift to the future Columbia. I would challenge that we don't have the capacity. You can say government can't do lots of things, but I have watched this department very closely, and I have seen it has not always been a thing of beauty and loveliness and efficiency, but boy, it is right now. And Mr. Cole is brings a singular set of expertise that if you wanted to be, if Phil Steinhaus couldn't run the Housing Authority, who would be the best person in the community to do that? It would be Mr. Cole. He is and enjoys the skills of a home builder and is academically strong and has a powerful sense of analysis and how he's run his department in a manner that if you look at all of the metrics and any objective standard, that they've all just been, you can see when Mr. Cole took over. You know, it's really been a well-run department. This is within our core competency, within our staff. It's well within the rubric of what the public expects for us to do something realistic and strong about affordable housing. So it's within our competency. It's within the expectations of at least the people who elected me of what they want to see. We just did this great affordable housing symposium, get very well run operation. Mr. Cole spearheaded that. And there was a large consensus from a diverse group of stakeholders that this is the biggest thing that we should be doing. So it gets into difficulties of kind of rollouts because we had the Lynn Street properties. We had to go forward with the, I can't remember what we did last meeting, whether it was a rezoning or a replat. So, you know, we have to bring it forward without it being fully formed. And so it opens it up to public scrutiny and people can then interpret the worst possible outcomes of what it could be. But even with all of that, there's nothing about that deal and there's nothing about this deal that drives us towards the creation of a housing trust. If we ultimately decide as we go through a public process and take in input that that's what we want to do or what we don't want to do. This is a good community development block grant project. If we don't decide to go forward with a land trust, then we can still go through our previous model, which has been successful. I don't want to denigrate it. By saying that we want to do something different to have better and more meaningful long-term outcomes, because there are some advantages to our current model. It creates just a few more units with the same amount of resources. It just doesn't have that insurance of maintaining guaranteed permanent affordability. So everybody who knows a lot about affordable housing thinks the land trust model was forward. And we were happy to bow out and let the Columbia Housing Authority move forward. But with their changing emphasis with the availability of the RAD program, where they've really sent all of their resources into the redevelopment of the central city affordable housing through public housing stock, that's strapped their capacity and their ability to take on new projects. So there's a question of whether we want affordable housing in a year or two or whether we want affordable housing in a decade or two. That's the question that's in front of us tonight. We have a huge need, we have a public desire for it, and we have staff who are knowledgeable and capable in moving us forward in a very positive direction. I think it would be foolish to the extreme to do anything besides vote to purchase these properties and to reaccept. We weren't looking to do this, but government is often in the place where it falls upon us to do those things that nobody else is going to do. And who's going to build affordable housing in this area that could really use some nice redevelopment? If you've been down Lynn Street, it's just great. And the city's really pushed that. And I can only imagine what that area would be if we didn't have the competency and the resources, primarily federal. We don't put a lot of or any general fund dollars into this. It would be a bunch of dilapidated houses. And transients and vagrants would be living there and engaging in criminal activity. And instead, those areas have been cleared, and there are new housing. There's private development, that cottage-style development, which is something that people want to see that's spawned by the private sector based upon the development activities that we've done. And this, at least this small area, we're turning this around, and this is the next reasonable step to move forward on that.
I'd say I agree. Mr. Trapp, I don't see that this is a controversial issue. It's a great opportunity to do something important in a neighborhood that is already engaged in redevelopment and focused and interested in participating. And this is a great opportunity to give something back and to do it quickly. I'm always concerned about the long-term a process to get anything done, and this gives us the opportunity to move quickly and to have maximum impact and to do something that is visible and tangible, I think it will serve our relationship with the community in a very positive way to approve it.
May I have a motion second to amend 3-4-15 per the amendment sheet?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Any more discussion?
Well, I'll just reinforce what Mike and Clyde said, and especially my confidence in Tim and Randy's ability to make really good decisions here and interpret our strategic plan and our comprehensive plan and create permanent affordability in these areas. I think that they have studied other communities who've done this, and it is successful. It's still too slow for us. It still won't create enough affordable housing, even over a long period of time, but it is moving the needle distinctly in the right direction, and I will strongly support this this purchase.
Just one comment, and it doesn't bother me quite as much to be slow in government as it may some folks. What's important, I think, are Mike's remarks with regard to the in perpetuity part of this, and this affordable housing idea that we're really doing the equivalent of what we did with energy when we took on some of the propane, or not propane, but the liquid natural gas. To diversify some of our stock with regard to our fleet, vehicle fleet. This is the same kind of thing. This is an affordable housing initiative that has had wide support nationwide. It certainly has had a great deal of support, even in early visioning statements, that kind of thing. And affordable housing has been languishing for a long time until you put together this symposium. Recent symposium, there was a report that came out, and we never seemed to be able to pull the trigger on this. And as you pointed out, there has been a great deal of focus for the CHA on other issues. And I see this diversification in terms of increasing our affordable housing stock in perpetuity as a good step forward.
Any other discussion? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 349-15 as amended. Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
No.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nowzer?
Yes.
354-15 and 355-15.
Council Bill 354-15 is an ordinance determining it is in the public interest to construct street improvements on Providence Road from Stadium Boulevard to Stewart Road, approving and adopting plans and specifications, determining that the work shall be done by contract, calling for bids through the purchasing division, providing for payment for the improvement, authorizing the city manager to obtain, execute, and record all documents necessary for the improvement, providing for compliance with the prevailing wage law, in state-mandated construction safety training, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading. Council Bill 355-15 is an ordinance declaring the need to acquire easements for construction of street improvements on Providence Road from Stadium Boulevard to Stewart Road, authorizing acquisition by negotiation or, if necessary, by condemnation, authorizing the city manager to obtain and execute all documents necessary for acquisition of such land, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Thank you. The acquisition of easements and authorizing the bid call for construction of the Providence Road from Stadium Boulevard to Stewart Road project is the next step in the public improvement process. Three IP meetings were held, one on April 24, 2008, one April 20, 2010, and one March 20, 2013. Three public hearings were held on November 19, 2012, April 15, 2013, and June 3, 2013. At the June 3, 2013 public hearing, Council authorized staff to proceed with the plans and specifications. The construction cost is estimated at $2,815,000. 18 street easements, 3 drainage easements, and 27 temporary construction easements will need to be acquired from a total of 28 properties at an estimated cost of around $1 million. STP funds in the amount of $1,852,000 were appropriated to the project in 2013. Remaining costs associated with this project will be funded by possibly more STP funds, which we get on an annual basis from MoDOT, and the quarter cent capital improvement sales tax. Providence Road, including intersection and signals, are maintained by MoDOT. And to date, $553,000 has been spent on the project with consulting designs and staff time. Be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Council?
I'll just jump in here. I appreciate staff putting this on old business just because this has been a very long process, controversial process for these many years, and I just wanted to make sure people in the Grasslands or anyone else would have the opportunity to speak if they felt that they had a desire to do so. But I was also, I think I was reading in the newspaper over the past couple of days that the turning lane, the configuration is going to be a little bit different, which is why some of the increase in the cost for the easement acquisitions, is that what I read? I think some of the cost for the easement acquisition is a little bit higher than what we had anticipated.
Oh, that is correct. The design has not changed since 2013, but the value of the land, it has changed considerable as time goes and as the process has changed from then to now. Considerable amount of construction has driven up the cost of the land in that area, and so the sooner we can have the acquisition, the less money that we'll be spending on easements.
Okay, so there's not going to be any change in any of the plans. It's just the cost because it's
the cost
of time
has jumped considerably, which has gotten our attention, and so we are wanting to move as quickly as we can with the easement acquisition.
So the money we saved on the Turner acquisition of easements was probably just eaten up by all this increased cost.
Well, once we have the authority, then we will do our process for appraisals. And so with that, we'll have comparables and we'll know what values that we'll need to make offers on. And so we do have a very regimented process that's mandated by Federal Highway and MoDOT. And so those steps will be initiated once we do have the authorization.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Any other questions?
Yeah, this is a MoDOT road, but we're doing the improvements on it?
This was a 2005 ballot project that was voted on by the in the 05 ballot. This is the last project for that ballot. At the time, it was an access for the residents out of the Grasslands to have a signalized intersection. The original concept in 05 or 04 or whenever that was presented was a road of Burnham connecting through the FISAI house into Rawlins at that intersection. As the project developed, there was considerable objection to the taking of land from the historic property of the FISAI house. And after the IP meetings that were held, that option was something that was not well received, and staff came to council with the comments about that, and we were given direction to look at other options to make the corridor and the access work. And so we brought forward, I think at one time we had 8 options that we presented at some of the IP meetings, and we had actually went to a public hearing with one of the options. Then we were given new direction after another public hearing to make the corridor work with the amount of traffic volume, and so that included geometric improvements along the corridor at Turner and Rollins and Burnham, and then restricting some movements out of Brandon and Bingham, and then a dedicated right turn that would get the West Movement Stadium out of the through movement. And so that's going to require additional turn lane capacity there at Brandon going south. And so having done a lot of traffic modeling, those improvements seem to satisfy MoDOT. It is on their corridor, and any break in access or new signalize would require their approval. And they did approve the layout as proposed.
So Burnham Road, when I look at your project location, Burnham Road is going to have a right-hand turn onto Providence and a light there.
Yes, and
we're getting rid
two
of
lefts.
The light.
And
I'm
getting,
sorry?
Yes, and two left movements, northbound movements out of Burnham, and then we are removing the light at Rollins.
Okay. And then what's happening at Turner?
A signal at Turner.
Okay. And anything at Stadium and Providence?
Just the extension of the right turn lane that is a southbound to westbound movement. One exists now, but it's a very short. So on heavy peak movement, you may have four cars stacked there and many more behind that would like to get in that lane but can't because of the through movement has blocked that right turn. So if we are allowing a lot of those right turn movements to take place, it helps with the capacity flow on Providence Road.
Are you doing that by widening Providence then?
Just
where are you going to get that right-hand turn?
We'll have to acquire property.
Okay. So at one point there was discussion about taking out houses there.
That was the public hearing. I believe that happened in
2012,
yeah.
And so what's the plan now?
We are not removing houses. That somehow was reported in the paper about houses, and we corrected that with the article. But
this is good.
That was not the case. We were directed not to move forward with that plan. And so we were asked to come forward with another.
Right.
And so we started the IP process over again, right. and initiated a final design.
So where are you getting the land for the right-hand turn from Providence to West Stadium?
From that adjacent property owner. We will have to appraise the property and acquire the property.
But not the
not
whole
the
property, just a strip.
Just the property for the right turn lane.
Strip.
Okay.
Yes, there's no houses. It's just going to encroach into their property with a right turn pocket.
Thank you.
Any other questions of staff? Would anyone in the public like to speak? Seeing none, any discussion by council?
So what this bill is to authorize.
Well, we've authorized planning, yeah. And they've come back with the plans, and now
authorized.
They want to proceed with getting the easements.
So I guess I do have one more question. The total bill for this sounds like $3.8 million.
That is correct.
And that's the construction and the acquisition. Back in 2013, the projected bill was $2.1 million. Was that both, or was that just the construction at that time?
That was both.
That was both. So it's almost doubled.
Yes, the cost. The land is okay. we are needing to, and we have looked at designs whether we could go with retaining walls to minimize, and we have analyzed it, and we feel like what we've got is the minimal amount of property we need.
If my memory serves me, some of the original plans that were rejected for a number of reasons were up in the $8 or $9 million range, weren't they initially?
I think 6 or 7, I think.
Six or seven.
Yeah.
So I knew it was high.
That was because we were going to have to condemn houses and take all those properties. Yeah.
And the house on the corner there has been demolished and rebuilt. I haven't really looked at it myself, but I've heard from constituents who are concerned that where it's been rebuilt, it's going to be very close to the widened lane. Have you looked at that?
Yes, we have. And they had our plans prior to reconstructing the house. We made them available to them through their engineer.
But we didn't have any legal authority at that time to dictate where the house was rebuilt.
We did not.
But it's going to be within code and everything.
They knew where the street was going to be.
Yeah.
They knew where the street
right.
was going to be.
Right. But it's going to be within any codes or safety.
The setback, I believe it's not a conflict with the building setback with that. It is, and because of some of these issues, we've allowed time to negotiate these, and our construction schedule is for summer of 2017. Because we do feel like it may take some time to acquire some of these properties.
Right. Thanks, Dave.
If there are no more questions, let's call the roll on 354.
Council Bill 354-15, Ms. Peters?
Yes.
McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Call a roll on 355.
Council Bill 355-15. Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
356-15.
Council Bill 356-15 is an ordinance levying a special assessment and authorizing the issuance of a special tax bill as it relates to the reconstruction of the sidewalk along the south side of Broadway from 8th Street to 9th Street in the city of Columbia, Missouri, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, let me just say that we have a request to table this from the owner who is not in town and from his attorney.
That's correct.
How long? Was it 2 weeks? I think 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, they were asking to table it to the next council meeting. Next regular council meeting,
okay,
is what Tom
may have a motion to table this to the next council meeting, which
January,
is the
whatever.
So moved.
First meeting in January.
Yeah, so moved.
Okay, we have a motion. Second.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Well, please read the consent agenda bills.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 350-15, 351-15, 352-15, 353-15, 357-15, 358-15, 359-15, 360-15, 361-15, 362-15, 363-15, 364-15, 365-15, 368-15, 369-15, 370-15, 371-15, 372-15, and resolutions 193-15, 194-15, 195-15, 196-15, 197-15, 198-15, and 199-15.
Call the roll, please.
Bills 350-15, 351-15, 352-15, 353-15, 357-15, 358-15, 359-15, 360-15, 361-15, 362-15, 363-15, 364-15, 365-15, 368-15, 369-15, 370-15, 371-15, 372-15, and resolutions 193-15, 194-15, 195-15, 196-15, 197-15, 198-15, and 199-15. Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes on all bills and resolutions except for R-195-15, from which I abstain.
Mr. Scala?
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
R-200-15.
Council Bill 215 is a resolution establishing an integrated water resource planning committee.
Staff, please.
An integrated resource plan is a utility plan for meeting forecasted peak and annual demand through a combination of supply-side and demand-side resources. Staff has been working with the Water and Light Advisory Board to complete a contract with a consultant to create an integrated plan for the water utility, or what is known as an integrated water resource plan. This process is designed to generate a long-range plan to serve as a guidance document for the water utility. Using the Water and Light Advisory Board plus four additional members will provide a 9-member citizen group to serve as the Integrated Water Resource Planning Committee that will interface directly with this process. This is the same approach that was taken to create the Integrated Resource Plan for the electric utility a few years ago. It is staff's expectation that this process and the resulting planning document will be completed prior to the finalization of the capital improvement plan to be funded by the next water utility bond. We've been working with the Water and Light Advisory Board to develop the scope of services for the consultant contract and expect to begin this planning process early in 2016. So with that, to answer any questions about the planning process we're here doing here.
Council?
Yeah, does the scope of this committee include funding philosophy for the water utility?
At this time, no. It's just pretty much aimed at demand side and supply side type of infrastructure development. So the primary goal is to really establish a funding projects, a group of projects that are needed to maintain the supply side and keep our water system intact. As far as revenue streams, while it will project what the cost is going to be, it doesn't dive into a cost of service study type analysis.
Okay, thanks.
We do cost of service studies on the water side.
but that's a separate process.
Any other questions from council? Would anyone in the public like to speak?
My name is John Conway. I live at 4902 Thornbrook Ridge, and just to speak in support of the formation of the committee that, again, from the Water and Light Advisory Board standpoint, that this is the next step that we need to take in our long-range planning. That and prior to that, in 2010-11, we had the future expansion of the treatment plant study by Corollo Engineers, and then in 2014, we had the distribution study, water storage studied by Jacobs Engineering, and currently we have Black and Veatch studying the assessment of the condition of the components of the water treatment plant, and this makes sense that our next step is to integrate this and bring this all together as to where we need to be as a future consideration. We did the cost of service study. The other thing that will lend support to this, we still daily use the hydraulic model that's been updated and calibrated and will lend itself to creating some sufficiency here. The other thing is that this is our real first hard look on the demand side management practices, which I think we really need to do, and that'll help us. And then the end result, we're going to be see where we go in the future as to our water supply and direct us. Thank you.
John, can you talk a little more about demand-side management practices? I understand, I think, what that means in terms of electricity. What does it mean in terms of water?
Well, water would be essentially equated to water conservation. What uses, Ian, are we making of the treated water that we could convert to non-treated water sources?
Oh, gray water.
Right, gray water. A real good example was earlier this evening from Parks and Rec, where they're taking the water from the pond and then also a hard rock deep well and see how that can be applied. There's, countrywide, there's, especially you go to California, some of the western states, there's some pretty forward-thinking ideas that are going forward that we certainly could use in our community possibly, and then that'll put off maybe when we have to expand our treatment plant.
Right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Conway. Anyone else? Council discussion.
I'll just say I think water is going to be one of the next crises we're going to be facing as a country, and as probably a global issue. Clean water. Our underground aquifers are diminishing. We're not saving. We all assume that water is an endless supply, and it's not. And so I'm fully supportive of anything we can do on the demand side to reduce water consumption, start using more gray water, and conserving to save our water for both today and in the future. So I'll fully support this. Thank you.
Anyone else? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 215, Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Mr. McDavid.
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin.
Yes.
Mr. Trapp.
Yes.
Mr. Scala.
Yes.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer.
Yes.
Introduction, first reading. Please read the bills.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 373-15, 374-15, 375-15, 376-15, 377-15, 378-15, 379-15, 380-15, 381-15, 382-15, 383-15, 384-15, 385-15, and 386-15, first reading.
Report 120 is a report from the Water and Light Utility regarding public hearing communications plan.
Yes, this report really just details the our communications plan for the public hearing coming up for the transmission line project on January 19th. We just wanted to be able to put our communication plan in front of you to be able to kind of give us any direction that you feel like we're either not covering or anything you think we've done. Certainly, we are proposing a couple of mailings in here that we've detailed. The first mailing has already been done, but we do have another mailing that we've detailed in this communication plan that is coming up. In addition to that, we're also
suggesting that, that there would be a certified mail process that would go along with any property owners that are within 250 feet of the option A, B, or B2 that we would also propose, and we have detailed in this communication plan. So it just kind of goes over all the neighborhood associations, all the different avenues that we're going to be using, and we just wanted to run this by you for any comment, any suggestion, anything that you'd like to give us as we proceed through this communication plan in preparation for the 19th of January's public hearing.
Let me just say that having been on the council when this issue was considered, I don't agree with the citizens who say that there wasn't adequate input from the community. I mean, I think I sat through a lot of long hearings, a lot of public comments. There were a lot of stakeholder meetings, and I understand that some people feel as though they weren't informed, but I think that the city has gone out of its way to make this information as available as it can, and I think this removes any question about the hearing in January 19th. Any other comments?
Yeah, well, obviously we're not debating this issue now. I like the fact that you're going, that you're bending over backwards to announce the hearing so that we can't have questions about public input. I would, about a lack of opportunity for public input, but I would say, in my opinion, that it was not just a lack of opportunity or awareness of public input. I think that some of the information that was presented, such as the geometries of the light of the electric pylon poles, was misleading, and there was a very strange mathematical matrix process that looks to me like it was designed to get a particular result, and I've not had any information to counter that opinion yet.
I would agree with you on that. I didn't understand it, and I ignored it.
I have asked questions a dozen times and not got any satisfactory answers.
Just a comment on that. It was a matrix, and it was a model, and models typically have errors. When you create some of these models, it measured something, and I think at least it gave an indication of how the rest of the community felt about some of these pathways. Obviously, the most important were the folks that came in terms on both sides, and who are now, we probably will see again for this public hearing with the potential for moving this route. But that's why I think I don't think that this survey and this model, at least not in my opinion, I took this too seriously. It was just another indicator on how the community felt about where we should decide generally to make sure that these things were in place. But I think that, I think it's fair to criticize where some of these factors came from and some of the weightings and so on and so forth. But I'm glad that we at least, because there are always some holes in this process whereby you can't contact everyone, and people move in and out, and some people probably weren't notified and so on. So to dot all the I's and cross all the T's, I think that's what this next process. And I would always want to err on the side of allowing the public to air their grievances, even if we have to sit through some of these meetings. That's why we make the big bucks here, I guess. But at any rate, I appreciate what the staff has done in this regard, and we'll go through another round, and hopefully we can nail this down and settle this.
Thank you.
I'll add, thank you for bringing this information again and making this public, because it has been a very open process. It's been a very bumpy ride. And there's been some, again, people that have felt that they have not been notified. And I think one point in time I may have been on the receiving end of that. But that was then, and today is today, and we're moving forward. And I just would like to just reconfirm that when this hearing comes up on January 18th, we'll be discussing whether or not we're going to continue with option A or one of the other two options, and are we going to be talking about the poll placements at that time? I have asked to have this all together so that we can allow people to come and speak. So,
well,
Well, let me first say it is the 19th.
Yes, the 19th, not the 18th,
get that
yes.
out on the air.
Our primary focus on the 19th is the line routing, which is going back to the A, B, and B2 right. option. So that's the primary focus of the public hearing, the way we got the direction from the council when we got there. And that's what we're preparing for. Now, the actual pole placements is a line design
right.
parameters that would typically come along once the route is decided. So, you know, certainly pole placements we can't address at all on options B and B2.
Correct.
And to the extent we can represent what we've done so far on A, obviously when we went back to start with the line routing again, we haven't made any more progress on spending money on our line design.
But is it already designed and is it ready to go?
We are partially through the phase, which is when we did the design, we did the kind of the interested parties meeting.
Correct.
And we termed it as an open house to give people the idea of what we were looking at that time and trying to get feedback from the community on where we tentatively had the poles placed.
So that process we've put a halt to that, so it's not
correct.
Finished now.
Okay. Correct. That process has been halted.
Okay. We're
somewhere in the middle of that design process.
Okay.
So, for example, if we change the route, we wouldn't want to spend any more money on
right,
the details.
Right, I understand that, yes.
So I would characterize what you've seen so far as the first draft, knowing that there's a lot of input left to go on the pole placement.
Because I was under the impression we might be able to do those on the same evening so that we don't have to have another long, drawn-out hearing over the same issue again and just move from one to the next.
Well, yeah, we're
rather
you know,
than doing it in January and then coming back in February for the pole design.
If we were proceeding with A, our next action would have been to come back with council for basically our description of the easements that we needed to acquire based upon where we were with the design, and that would have been the kind of the pole placement meeting where people would have talked about where this pole was and if it could be moved. It would be our final request on where the poles go. We've got a ways to go to get to that meeting.
Okay. Thank you for that
clarification. Especially now that we're not moving forward with that right now.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I'm glad I asked.
I'll just stress about the matrix, too, by the way. Your combined comments are exactly right. It was one indicator, as Carl mentioned, of many. And if you feel it's unsatisfactory, feel free to disregard it. It was an attempt to create a model to sort of boil down all of the input. And I would say the one takeaway I have from the whole effort was each route is equally unloved. And now, if you know, I don't think there's much more of an outcome than that to it. So, you know, take it for what it is, and I would say that your comments are...
I think the problem from the matrix, as I looked at it, it was made so many assumptions that... were not hard numbers. I mean, they were just very subjective and almost arbitrary, and so that's why it was, you know, I it was the best attempt you can make. And sometimes when you come up with the benchmarks or matrices, you do the best you can, but you have to at some point go back to the validity of the assumptions and the data that you're inputting.
Yeah, you may prefer just the survey results, for example,
right.
over that.
And we are intending to at least cover the matrix again to the extent you guys feel comfortable spending time with it. We are preparing to do exactly that.
Okay. Let's go to Report 121. Ms. Buffalo.
Hello. The last report of tonight. Thank you for this. So Columbia was chosen with, I think,
it's right? one more.
It's only
one
four.
End with the best. No, I'm just kidding. Columbia was chosen to be a leadership community for STAR Communities. STAR is a sustainability tracking and rating system for communities that looks like seven broad goals, where it's looking at your built environment, climate and energy, economy and jobs, education, arts and community, equity and empowerment, health and safety, natural systems, and then innovations and process. We found that there was a lot of alignment with a lot of our goals of our previous strategic plan and our current one. And so when we had the opportunity to become one of their leadership communities, we jumped at it, and they gave us scholarships to do part of this, to basically like hand-holding to go through the certification. Where we like the program is that it will give us the opportunity to benchmark us against other cities that have sustainability metrics that they're measuring success on, as well as give us some of the metrics that we can use to measure outcomes within our own strategic plan that we have in there, but we don't necessarily know how other communities measure how they're doing on affordable housing or how are they doing on living wage. Well, we can look at this and see how those other communities are doing and see where maybe we're leading in the nation on, as well as maybe where we have opportunities for improvement. So this is really just information only. We're going through the certification process right now, going through their rating system of 44 objectives with lots and lots of action areas and outcomes to measure. And then we'll turn in our certification, hopefully to be certified by fall 2016. So look for exciting movements there.
Just had a question. I mean, oftentimes this is a kind of interesting area that the Environment Energy Commission would be involved in. Have you brought it to their attention?
Yep. So I presented.
Because their input's always welcome.
Yeah, so presented at their November meeting. One of the ways that they got excited about this, and this was brought to our attention by some council members at a previous National League of Cities, seen a presentation. Certification for STAR started in 2013 with the first, Tacoma, Washington was the first certified community. Now there's about 40 communities that have been certified. And EEC, when I brought up the discussion with them, got excited because of the idea of it showing those opportunities for improvement so that you're seeing ways that you could be better, and it gives you a focused effort, which I like to have a focused effort of things to work on.
Yeah, I'll just add, thanks very much for pushing forward on this. I know there's some, you know, heavy lifting on the front end.
Yes.
But I really think that this kind of program does target our resources most efficiently to achieve the goals that have the, you know, the best chance of success.
Yeah, and I would say the staff, a team that I've brought together on this, they get excited about it because so often we get told, oh, just go work on something for XYZ. And this kind of has what metrics they can find, the measurement, census data that's out there, model policies or codes that they can adopt or things that we could actually be the innovator on. So it's a really well-done system, which is why I kind of said paused on doing it for a few years until they developed their system a little bit more thoroughly.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you. And for the last report.
Oh, well, that one doesn't really matter.
You don't have to stay for this one. It is the interdepartmental transfer of funds request, unless you want to deal with it. It's informational. There are no more comments. We'll move to the public comments. I'll yield 3 minutes to anyone who wants to speak about anything.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line. I merely want to thank the entire City Council for going forward with B349-15. You are definitely putting Randy Cole in the position of a person for people to turn to. As a result of seeing the addresses on Lynn Street, I run my memory back to, I believe, I will double check, that the third house we built was there on Lynn Street. So this is a very powerful message that you are sending to that general community. Our ultimate goal with Habitat was to spread the houses so that ownership cleans up the environment in the other downtrodden situations. That person wants to have respect. They want to keep their property clean. They are very proud of their property. And as a result, ownership comes showing this. When I mentioned this during the meeting, there was a lady from the University of Missouri, and she had suggested possibly using the students. When I speak of house number 3, we truly gave that project to the university students. The house was constructed a little different. It was a color brown, and that's what my indicator will be when I find the home. I think it's on Lynn Street. Maybe Mr. Cole could possibly have monthly statements of update on the progress in that area. And one of the comments inside was, this has been going on for over 10 years, and nobody's been able to find a way to make profit. Now, we know everything has to have profit, but not everything has to be excessive profit. The land trust idea is an excellent idea. I see what you were promoting as far as perpetual we need to do something to leave for the future. Thank you.
Ho, ho, ho. I'm Greg Ahrens of 1504 Sylvan Lane. And on behalf of Columbia Eve Fest, the community celebration of the arts at New Year's Eve, I'd like to just welcome you all to come on down to it. And your tickets are available now, and get your buttons early and enjoy yourself down at the Missouri Theater and the United Methodist Church. And I guess that's about it. Thanks. Oh, I have a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays.
Thank you. And I always knew Santa Claus was a Cardinal fan. Yeah. Anyone else? We'll go to council comments.
Yeah, I got a couple. Much in the vein of the STAR program that Barbara just reported on, I, at the National League of Cities Conference, heard about a new program from the U.S. Department of Energy called Solar Powering America by Recognizing Communities, or the SPARC program. This is a national recognition program with no-cost technical assistance. I talked to Barbara about it, and it was also presented to the Water and Light Board as something we should look into. They voted to recommend that we do apply to this program. We have to provide information regarding promotion of solar energy in our community on certain planning and zoning policies and laws that we have, permitting and inspection processes, as well as financing of our energy utility. And on the basis of that information, we will receive technical assistance on best practices around the country and some goals to move towards in terms of promoting more locally generated solar energy in our community. So, in fact, Tom O'Connor of the Water and Light Board has already essentially completed the application, but we will want staff to go through it and verify everything, and probably Barbara to lead putting in. But I would like to propose that we instruct staff to apply to the SPARC program on behalf of the City of Columbia. Do I have a second?
Is that a consensus? Can you do that? Do you need a motion? Or can you?
I see four of you nodding. All right. That's fine.
I think you can assume there's consensus on Mr. Thomas's recommendation.
Great. Thank you. Would like to again voice my support for the expansion of the Police Community Outreach Unit and the process that has led to the selection of these three underserved areas. I would have loved to have heard more about the plans earlier today, but hopefully we can hear more as things continue to develop. With regard to training, I asked that question of Sergeant Hester, and I didn't totally understand the response, but I do know that the Department of Justice has a program called Community Orienting Policing Services, or COPS, which I think is regarded to be the gold standard in community policing training. So I don't know if you or the chief have looked into that, but I would encourage you to do so. Responding to Tracy Wilson-Kleekamp's comments earlier, I think that the city should host at least one public forum on race and equity. I participated in one that was organized by Diversity Awareness Partners a couple of weeks ago, and I think that we need to be part of a community-wide process that discusses this issue, and it'll take more than one or two public meetings. But I think the city should show leadership by organizing one of those. You and I talked about that already. It's on my list when we meet next time to maybe try to move forward and with a sort of a date and a format. But I think we need to examine our own, you know, in-house inclusion environment, as well as our sort of hiring practices and contracting practices, and give people an opportunity to come in and critique our efforts on the issues of race and equity. And then my final comment is that I will be out of town and absent from the February 1st City Council meeting, I'm afraid.
Mr. Scala?
I just had two. One kind of builds upon what Mr. Thomas was saying with regard to racial equity issues. I was going to suggest that at the minimum, for starters, we ought to have a public work session to talk about race and equity issues. I recently distributed to the rest of the council and the city manager some of the resource materials that were associated with the NLC meeting in Nashville and a group called REAL, which is Racial Equity and Leadership. There was quite a bit of stuff there, and there are racial equity toolkits and all kinds of other things. That group, the National League of Cities, which we are a member of, is certainly very supportive of our involvement in these kinds of things, and that council, that REAL council, can be of great assistance to us. We might even consider not only having a forum, because we have to draw the public in, but we also have to understand where we are, you know, in terms of where the city is. And I think getting this all on the agenda for a work session, a future work session, you know, as quickly as possible, because as Ms. Kleeklamp was suggesting, there are lots of different views here. This is a very serious kind of debate, and this whole idea about institutional structural racism and understanding and getting a handle on it and getting some of these resources would be useful. Along with that, those resources was also couple of other things. One was there was this came out of the Orlando Leadership Summit, where Orlando has used some of their public projects to engage minority contractors and so on in a very real, tangible way, something that's very positive. It's called the Blueprint that I, too, distributed here. And at some point, and I made this available as well to Ms. Wilson Kleekamp and the Race Matters folks. And then finally, as a part of this, the Governing magazine, which I think most of us get at some point or another, over the past several years has been featuring a whole host of articles about community policing, getting at what it really is, what it's all about, and some developments in other cities as benchmarks as to how to go about this. All of those, that information was in there, and I would encourage the council to take a look at that and peruse it at whenever it's convenient for you. But we ought to bring that forward and talk about some of this, at least in a public work session, and then eventually this may morph into a public discussion, which I think is really important. The other thing I have is very different, and that is I had a constituent I talked to a constituent several weeks ago, and I don't know exactly how to approach this, but I do know it has to do with public health, and I don't want the city obviously to interfere with a private business owner necessarily, but there was a complaint from this particular person that the extent of the number of decibels that were produced by one of the concerts that this gentleman went to at the Blue Note was in excess of 150 decibels. That's louder than most airplanes inside this is a public health issue, I think. I just don't know the extent to which we can do anything except maybe appeal to the folks about this kind of thing, because we are really damaging people's ears with this kind of intensity, and then you find folks that are just leaning on the speakers on top of everything. It's bad enough that it's not tolerable in that. But I don't. Is there anything that we can do about it? Is this a legal matter that?
Well, we'll have to research that. I would imagine.
Well, This gentleman went in with a decibel meter and came out with some astounding numbers. And I have had one occasion to go, and I love to go to the Blue Note. There's there's great things that happen there. I haven't been in a little while, but there was one concert that I went to that it was painful. I mean, you could not be in the same room. And I'm thinking that at least we ought to bring this up and make some sort of contact and suggestion, if nothing else, if we have no other recourse.
Well, let us prepare a report about what's happened in other parts of the country.
That'd be great. That's all I have.
Ms. Nuzzer?
Does there never come a time in a person's life where they have the responsibility to say, this is loud, I'm not going?
Yeah, but we're paying for it. I mean, public health is kind of a communal responsibility for the government. That's one of our charges.
Any comments?
I'm going to leave. Merry Christmas.
I've got a couple. I will say tonight, Independence, Missouri, passed Tobacco 21. So there's now 21 million people, including the folks in Columbia, whose young people are protected from purchase of tobacco. Just with the recent Tribune article on the lack of enforcement, it's certainly understandable with our strained police resources, but I think it speaks to, you know, continuing to look at what we can do to make that more meaningful. I think the vast majority of retailers comply with the law, but 17 to 20 year olds will tell you not all the time, and as would the Food and Drug Administration. Also today, I had a great pleasure to tour the Special Collections and Rare Book Room at the University of Missouri, and I would like to thank I'm going to mangle her name, Baraba Tarlo, and she was very pleased that I had invited myself to a Gary Ward generated tour when I'd heard about it in our meeting, and that I represented the city council. She wanted me to convey to all of you that, and to really the entire city, that the Special Collections and Rare Books are a resource for everyone in the community and not just for university students, that they very much appreciate being able to show off the amazing collections, get to see the page from the original Gutenberg Bibles and all some really, really neat stuff. I thought if we ever wanted to take a field trip, that it's well worth visiting. I know our city manager was a history major, and also thought that the Historical Preservation Commission might be well served by communicating with the, because they've got so much great history there, and there's an educational and communication focused. So I do have a flyer to pass on to them and to extend everyone's invitation to, they'll pull out based on what you're interested in. I'm sure they have some interesting stuff on governance, for example. So, and then in regards to the conversation about race, I think it is important. I know that the Human Rights Commission is looking on doing that under there. I'm not sure how far along they are with that process, if that's something that might serve as a good starting point. I also know the United Way is looking at seeing what they can do to have this. Really, it's not a campus issue. It is certainly a community-wide and nationwide issue. So we do want to do our part to make sure that we're facilitating these conversations and having good dialogue that helps move us forward and bring us together as one community.
Dr. Ruffin? I'm going to spend a couple minutes referring to the pre-council meeting on social services. And one of the items that was it wasn't their level area of expertise, but they've put economic development up there. And so my comments are probably designed to irritate those on the right and the left. So I'll make them. I don't know. You define your own center, right? One of the things that I spent a lot of time on is economic development in my term of office. And Reddy has been successful in job creation tied to the University of Missouri, but it's been generally a highly technical job creation. You know, radio. You know, when you get to Northwest Radio Pharmaceuticals. I mean, it's a great place for a physicist to get a job. IBM, the 300 or 400 jobs we have there are people with information technology backgrounds. And, 13% unemployment rate for African Americans, it's really more socioeconomic than the racial. They tie together. And we just have not done a very good job of creating jobs for the person with a high school degree, or a GED, or somebody with a criminal background. I know it's a global problem. I know it's a national problem. Manufacturing is a national problem. But I just want to tell you before I make my suggestion how difficult it is to be trying to lure a manufacturer into town, maybe 80 jobs, maybe 400 jobs, to bring them to town and show them what we've got, and they say, what are your incentives? And where do they go? They go to Texas. I mean, this is happening over and over. So we have some unique assets at the university for, like I said, these highly technical jobs that require advanced degrees. But frankly, we're not competing for manufacturing jobs. We just are not competitive. There's too many. They look at us and they go to Texas, or they go to Warrensburg, or they go to Sedalia, or they go to Mexico, Missouri. And the fact is, you know, we just lost tax increment financing for 4 years. We have no enterprise zones. We don't do incentives with some of the state incentives, Chapter 100, Chapter 353. So I'm going to ask the staff if they would at least look at the advisability, the potential of the city to embarking on at least some of these, you know, available incentives that are widely used, Chapter 100 and Chapter 353, just to have something to draw these in. I mean, it's just painful to see a company with 400 manufacturing jobs just dismiss you because, you know, you're too expensive for them to set up shop. So I don't know what we can do for that, but at least if staff could review that and give us an analysis of the potential of adding those to our very meager armamentarium, I think that would be useful. Any other comments? Meeting's adjourned.